tell you.
You got to make a fool's wise.
You ready?
Yes, we're ready.
Okay.
Are you?
Good evening, everyone. I would like to call to order Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors meeting for this April the 1st, and it's not an April Fool. We're really here, right?
So far.
All right. Let us stand and say the pledge and then call it by a moment of silence. I pledge
allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
I would like to have someone to adopt the agenda.
So moved.
Second.
All right. It has been moved by Mr. Weaver and seconded by Mr. Sheridan that the agenda is adopted. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone
aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. County Administrator's report, please.
Yes, ma'am. Madam Chair, members of the board, just a number of things to cover for an update. This is just a recent picture of the locks right down below the bridge here.
Oh, yeah.
Really, really great this time of year to be able to see them, but the old locks, you can just look over the top of our beautiful bridge and look down and see that below him. I'm not sure, Jason sent that to me, but I'm not sure where it came from, but whoever took it was great. So, Fluvanna Social Services is one of 21 in the social services organizations statewide that participate in this Virginia Learning Collaborative Series. And Ann Perkins that handles our foster care and prevention programs is our staff member that's participating in that and leading this effort to help focus on the development of practice strategies and system improvements. And so anytime we can participate with other social service agencies like this, it just helps elevate our game too and get a lot of great ideas. And this specific program is important. We appreciate Ann's work on that. Cheryl Wilkins was elected as the Secretary of the Virginia Emergency Management Association. Quite an honor, and appreciate it because we get some representation at the state level on the VEMA, so that helps us as well. This is just a recent citizen comment. I thought it was nice because a lot of folks worked really hard on the annual report, and someone took the time to send a note in to me and said that they really were impressed by the annual report, and it was well done, full of great information, and they appreciated it. So. I'm thankful that people are actually reading it, and it'll remain up on the website until the next one we do, but we also have hard copies if people are interested in it too. It is chock full of great information. So.
Yes, it is.
Some spotlights on business. Small Town Precision Service Company, a local Fluvanna business, has been in business 2 years now, and they're in the process of growing and looking to expand operations within the county, which is a good thing for them and for us. Central Virginia Partnership for Economic Development is holding a business lunch, and we're trying to invite key business leaders from around the county to the Spring Creek for this luncheon in April. And Mr. Popowitz has been coordinating with the CVPED and with the businesses around the county to get them to attend so we can talk a little bit about what CVPED can do for them as well. And then the Piedmont Workforce Network is holding some business roundtables in the coming weeks, and will be a great way for businesses to get some ideas and look at workforce needs that they have and that others have, too. Reminder, the Louisa County and Louisa County Water Authority Town Hall meeting on their proposed raw water line along the eastern side of our county is in Kent Store at the ARC on April 7th, Tuesday, April 7th at 7 p.m. That's open to the public, of course. Ms. Booker, I think you know about this. JABA said they had some excess commercial kitchen equipment at the Vinegar Hill Cafe at Jefferson School. I was down there the other day, too, for meetings and for presentation, and so I worked with Marta Keene, the CEO, mm-hmm. and have now connected with John Thompson, our extension agent. So he and one of his staff members have gone down there to meet with those folks. We'll take pictures of the various items they've got, get an inventory of it, and then provide that inventory to JABA. So if JABA does, as they get ready to start closing that Vinegar Hill operation down and selling off that equipment, we're first in line for some of that equipment. And so we'll come back to the board with the potential cost of that in case the board wants to support that. But it may be a way to much less expensively get really good quality commercial kitchen equipment that JABA is no longer going to be using. So it'll be a significant discount. But anyway, we'll see what that bears out. I actually looked the other day for something that was responding to a question from one of the state organizations about cell phone use, and both Gail and I thought it was in our policies, and we can't find it any place, even in the one that we did last summer about updated last summer before on vehicles. So we'll draft this up if the board concurs with that prohibition on cell phone use and texting while operating county vehicles. We thought it was already in place. Isn't it certainly is law? In place as a policy, but it's not an informal written policy.
Isn't that a state law?
No.
Texting isn't a state law?
No.
You can text and drive.
And you'll see lots of people doing it every day. But in county vehicles, certainly a different thing. But anyway, I'll go ahead and draft it up, and we'll get it before the board. But it'll just be an update to our county vehicle policy if everyone concurs.
I thought texting was against the law.
I did, too.
I don't think it's in the Commonwealth.
Oh, it is.
I know phone calling is not.
I know phone calling.
I know phone calling is not. I always thought the texting was.
I thought it failed.
But I don't last know.
It failed?
I thought it failed okay. Last general assembly.
Yeah. Sheriff?
Either way, it's not a smart thing to do.
Sheriff's American.
Well, when one of those police officer types walk in, we'll ask them.
Okay.
But anyway, clearly cell phone use is not. But again, regardless of what the regular population does in county vehicles, I think it makes certainly much more sense.
Different.
The last thing we'd want is somebody getting hurt, one of our people or someone else, because we were using a cell phone. So the guidance that I provide since I've been here is always, if you need to answer your cell phone, pull off the side of the road.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, don't do it. But so we'll just firm that up and incorporate it in our policy and get it back before the board. Just a note about the Columbia Town Council meetings. They're actually going to move their town council meetings while they still meet to the parish hall at St. Joseph's Catholic Church there, rather than continue to do it in the old town hall building, because there's no heat or air conditioning there, and the restroom facilities have been a problem lately too. So this is posted, they'll be posted on their facilities. It's on our website and on the Columbia website for us, and we'll put it in news flash.
Are they working on transferring ownership of that?
They are working on that, yes.
Just to let the board know, the next step in this process is to have the court enter an order confirming the results of the election. And I endorsed and filed the draft order this afternoon.
I'm talking about the building.
I know, but that then confirms the contract with the county, and confirms going forward and winding up the town's business.
So that they are proceeding with negotiation with St. John's Parish. The parish has already said they want the building.
That's part of the wind down process.
And we found out who owned it?
No more than we had before.
Okay.
Their meeting's still at 1:30?
Pardon?
What time?
No, the evenings are 7 o'clock. 7 o'clock meeting.
This is the town meeting.
Oh, not the task.
Not the task.
No, the town council meetings.
Yeah.
And task force, I'm waiting on a callback
They're supposed to be setting one up.
Pat's supposed to be setting another one up so that we can talk to the task force, and then we'll come back to the Board of Supervisors with recommendations.
Mm-hmm.
So. We've got some water problems at Pleasant Grove House, the well specifically for the Pleasant Grove House. You can see that's a pan of water that they poured the other day. Mr. Stevens is working on options and alternatives, and so that'll be coming back before you. We think that the well may be a plastic-cased well rather than steel-cased well, and Mr. Stevens can talk all the technical details of it, but just giving you a heads up, we'll be coming with some more information. And there'll be, for the fix, it will cost some dollars. I don't mean hundreds of thousands of dollars, small dollars that we can done on the Capital Reserve Maintenance Fund, but it's an unidentified problem that now is affecting the water quality at the house.
Do you have filters on it now?
Mr. Stevens, do we have filters on that system?
No. You know, a lot of times when you have some of these problems, they use filters.
Yeah.
Have we had the water tested?
They're in the process of doing all that. So we don't have any answers for you today. I'm just giving you a heads up. And
it's all right, isn't it?
Water turns that color when it rains, which means
a leak, yeah.
Surface water is going down and making it directly into the well. It's failed probably 3 out of its last 5 bacteriological tests, so we've got do not drink signs right now. But the plan is, if we're going to have the museum open to the public and the comfort station open to the public, we'd like the water to be safe to drink. So I'd like to fix the well put a pitless adapter unit on it and a concrete apron around the wellhead, and I'll be back probably in 2 weeks to let you know how much that's going to be.
You say plastic pipe?
I believe it's
is
a plastic.
Affecting that?
Well, a lot of residential type wells now do use a plastic casing, the casing pipe itself. And I'm not even 100% sure that it was ever properly grouted when it was drilled. That's actually a much worse problem than a plastic casing.
Plastic pipe in, and it's great.
An improper grout job is a whole lot worse problem than a plastic casing pipe. If it was just plastic casing pipe, we'd probably be okay. But I don't think it's got very much grout in it. Not sure when it was drilled, but it's been darker than that at times. But usually within a day of rainfall starting, that's what comes out the faucets at the Pleasant Grove House.
So you get any runoff
we're working
water
on
in it.
I believe so.
We got the right
one.
Yeah,
if they grout it and all, it gets stopped.
So, anyway.
It might not be it.
You've heard from the technical expert. We'll come back to you with more information and let you know what the potential solutions and costs are. The night crew for the second contract crew started on Sunday evening, and so they're operating out of the Palmyra Rescue Building, and then volunteer crews will still run out of the stations when they're available as well. The National Crime Victims Week, Rights Week, Community Day is a family-friendly event that's held down at the Intellis Wireless Pavilion. There's a flyer that's linked up on our website, but they'll be having an event down there on the April 19th in the afternoon, and lots of participation from community organizations, but it'll be on the 19th. And then, put the wrong button. And then our third annual employee wellness fair is on May 6th down at Carysbrook. And so that flyer has been going out to staff, and we'll make sure we get it to your calendars as well. But it's all from 11:30 to 1:30 on the 6th of May. It's a Wednesday board meeting day. So you can come down there and get some goodies and have some lunch and then get ready for your board meeting at 4 o'clock.
Okay.
So.
The wellness, do you do any type of blood pressure and stuff like
sure.
that?
Sure. So down at the bottom. Health assessments and monitoring, stress relief and relaxation, nutrition and healthy foods,
okay.
fitness, sports, a variety of things go on during that wellness fair. And Gail Parrish, our HR manager, in concert with some of these other organizations and Parks and Rec, put on a really good program down there each year. And Jefferson Pharmacy has also stepped in to help sponsor that this year for the county event.
But no shots.
Nice.
Thanks. Yeah, it's not shot season, I don't think. There's
no
immunization going on right now. We may do shots, but that won't be part of this.
Different type of shot, huh?
It's April Fool's, sorry. We're just joking. So remember, next Wednesday you've got a 7 p.m. budget public hearing. Tonight is your, this afternoon is your tax rate public hearing because of the reassessment. Next week is your budget public hearing, which will also include tax rates, budget and CIP. And then the following week is your regular third week of meeting, the 18th. That'll be when you would normally adopt the budget that night, the budget and CIP. But I'd like to do an economic development work session at 4 that day if you're all available. We've got some folks coming from CVPED. Okay. So one won't, and you're gone, right? No, not for
the
18th.
What about the
18th? 15th?
15th. 15th. I was getting ready to say
15th. 15th, yeah. 15th. See, that's what I told you. It was 15th.
Yeah, thank you.
Sorry. What? Oh, okay.
Yeah. What?
Okay, you guys got me all confused. Wait on, hold on. Wrong one.
The 15th.
Yeah, so 15th, sorry. I don't know where I got the 18th from. There's an 18th meeting sometime during the year, I'm sure.
Sometimes.
But anyway, that's if that's not convenient, we'll have to reschedule. But I've got people from CVPED. They're going to come and do some presentations that are really good information that you all need to hear, and then some updates from Mr. Popowitz. But at least one won't be able to be here. So what do you all want to do?
Economic work session. Everybody available on the 15th to come in at 4 for the work session?
I'm not.
You won't be able to.
Will you be at the meeting that night?
Yeah.
So can we do it at 5 if you wanted, if that makes
sense. At 4. I mean, it's
okay.
And then, but you'll be here at 7. Yeah.
Yes, ma'am.
Well, I'll send a note out to you and remind you, and we'll check and see if it works for everybody. But if not, I'll try to get it scheduled for some other time. I could also have her come to do a presentation during the board meeting, but then your board meetings get a little late, and I really want Mr. Popowitz to be able to cover a variety of things for economic development, too.
You were going to do something on the 6th.
That was, I wanted to do the FUSD and water system design and that discussion. But you're gone, and you all decided you didn't want to do it on the 6th, so I'll figure out another time to do it. So.
Okay.
Maybe we'll do it on the 20th and do it at 4 o'clock work session before the meeting on the 20th, your regular meeting on the 20th.
Right.
That's what we've tend to be having on schedule. But.
So I think you have four people for
okay.
4 o'clock.
Good. We'll set that up then and let you know. Any questions I can answer? Oh, one more thing. I'm supposed to tell you about the Fork Union Streetscape ceremonial groundbreaking, which is this Friday afternoon at 3 p.m. in front of the Baptist Church across from FUMA. So it'll be on the west side of Route 15, right in front of the Baptist, the side of the Baptist Church, across directly across from FUMA. And we'll have Ms. Booker and everyone's invited. I think we sent it out, but there are selected people that were on the Fork Union Streetscape Advisory Committee and others that we've invited to this event, along with VDOT and the engineers, to do a ceremonial groundbreaking for that project. And then the project kicks off on the 6th. On Monday, April 6th. And they say 60 to 90 days.
So. It's probably been how many years? Maybe 5 or 6, maybe?
It's quite a while.
Yeah,
it's not the full scope of everything that would be nice, but it's the scope of what we can afford within the dollars that are available for it. And then there are other phases that can be added on or done in the future if there are additional grant monies from VDOT or from other sources. But it will be a nice improvement. And they say 60 to 90 days for completion. So.
And I hope that quite a few of those project people will be there.
Yeah, they've all been notified.
They certainly were dedicated. They would meet.
We've talked to Mr. Sagarin, and he's coordinating with all the others. And anyone that can make it, we certainly want them there for that. And we'll have a pretty silver shovel to people to gather around and stick in the ground and try to dig up a piece of concrete to get it started.
Okay. All right. Okay.
Any questions I can answer?
If there are no questions, then we'll move on to the Board of Supervisors update. We have any board members who would like to give an update of any of the committees that they've served on since our last meeting? Anyone?
I haven't had anything.
Nobody?
PWM, I think, finally ratified everything, so
yes.
It's all done.
So we can talk about it now?
We can talk about
it. Okay. Okay.
We pulled it out of the minutes.
I know, I appreciate that.
Yes.
It wasn't me, so that was a big deal.
Yes. You haven't thanked yourself?
No, social services meeting was brief because I didn't speak. And without controversy because I didn't speak.
Okay.
And it was nothing to report.
All right.
It would be fair to recognize that several of us were at the luncheon yesterday.
Congressman Hurd was
nice enough to have everybody.
And Mr. Sheridan, our commissioner, did the introduction for Congressman
Hurd. That was a little long-winded, but other than that.
It was a spectacular job, and I actually called him today to tell him that. And gave him his
great.
April Fool's joke as well.
We were done with lunch by the time he got done speaking.
Yeah. Is he here to get congratulations?
He's back
there. Right. Well, we had quite a few. I'm sorry I couldn't make it. Quite a few.
Three supervisors, the sheriff, and myself.
That's very good. Yeah. We need to stay on top of our congressmen and legislators.
It was a good event, and as it is every year. So.
Definitely.
And his speech wasn't that long. It was 4 minutes and 35 seconds.
Mm-hmm. Took me a little while to get my watch started.
No, that's good. I attended the JABA board meeting, and of course, we talked about volunteer FluVam.
The county booth went well, and everybody really enjoyed it. Sure. I'm hoping the class will do it again next year.
Yeah. And we had a graduating class of the leadership group graduated. 26 people graduated, so that was good as well. Okay. Now I would like to open up our first public comments. If you would like to speak to the board, would you please come to the mic, give your name.
Not the public hearing.
Yeah, give your name and address. And this is not concerning the public hearing. This is anything else other than the public hearing, which will be on the fiscal year 16 proposed tax rate. Yes, sir. You have 5 minutes.
I'm Joe Shaver, and I live at 13 Rockwood Lane in Lake Monticello. And I'm here today not to offer any comment, pro or con, about anything on the board's agenda. And I know some people might think that's an April Fool's joke, but it's not. I want to talk to you about an issue that I've been very actively involved with over the past 3 or 4 months, legislative redistricting. And here in the Commonwealth of Virginia, and especially Central Virginia, we have a tremendous legacy. We have been the home of 8 presidents in the Commonwealth, and here locally, we've had Madison, Jefferson, Monroe, and Washington. And those men pursued a vision and a dream of a government by the people, for the people, and of the people. We have seen over several months, several years, a process of gerrymandering of our legislative districts that has eroded that concept tremendously and has been a black mark, I believe, on our democracy. We also have here a legacy of the Sorenson Institute down at the University of Virginia that pursues and has worked with key figures from local and state government to promote good governance. The founder of the Sorenson Institute was Lee Middleditch, and about a year ago, Lee Middleditch formed an organization called One Virginia 2021. That organization has a goal of creating a constitutional amendment to create a bipartisan redistricting commission and do away with gerrymandering. Gerrymandering has caused as much as 80% of our legislative elections to be non-competitive because legislators have picked the areas that they will run in, and they have selected their voters rather than the voters selecting their legislator. I was down in the Capitol in January with the Virginia Interfaith Center for Public Policy in the lobby day, and I talked with Rob Bell in his office along with some representatives from my group, and we talked with an assistant of Tom Garrett's. When we were there, I presented them with numerous editorials in support of this redistricting concept that One Virginia 2021 is pursuing. And my purpose for being here today, then, is to ask the board to consider giving a resolution in favor of the work of One Virginia 2021. That has been done by several counties around the state. The board of supervisors have approved resolutions in support. Just this week, we have an editorial that appeared in the Daily Progress on Monday. And that editorial concluded with, "Folks, this is why we desperately need redistricting reform in the Commonwealth. It's not a Democratic thing, nor is it a Republican thing. It's about what is best for Virginians." And I would add to that, we have seen over time that this gerrymandering problem has been abused by both Democrats and Republicans. It is a very nonpartisan issue that needs a bipartisan response. In the legislature, there was a bipartisan approval of legislation about redistricting in the Senate, and it got sent over to the House of Representatives, was referred to the Privileges and Elections Committee, and the chairman of that committee took that legislation and folded it up and put it in his pocket. When that happens, the electorate is deprived of knowing where their individuals stand on any issue because it does not go to the full House or the full Senate for a vote. And that, too, is an erosion of our democracy. So I would encourage you, I'm not asking for a response today, but to consider a resolution. And if you decide you would like to pursue one, I would like to bring Brian Cannon back with me the next time in May or June or whenever, to talk with you folks about the issue and about what One Virginia 2021 is doing to try and correct this problem. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Tristana Treadway, 893 Courthouse Road. I'm a local attorney with an office here at 165 Main Street. I didn't come here today with the intention of making a comment, but I didn't want to speak out inappropriately earlier. It is against the law to text and drive, and the code section is 46.2-1078.1. So I just wanted to make sure the board had the appropriate information.
Thank you, attorney.
I knew the state had common sense.
Okay. Anyone else like to speak? Yes, ma'am.
My name is Patricia Burkett. I have 14 Wisteria Way, Lake Monticello. I don't know if this is the appropriate time. I want to address the board about one of the items on your action list, the proposal to amend the Constitution. Is this the proper time?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. On Saturday, March 21st, I attended a talk on the effects of the Citizens United ruling at the Festival of Books in Charlottesville. It was only one of three talks on the subject that day. The room was packed. People wanted to know how to go about undoing the damage being done to democratic processes. Changing campaign finance laws and amending the Constitution were the only effective means seen by these panelists. Recently, Virginia legislators voted to, one, reduce the number of academic seats on the Science Advisory Board while increasing corporate membership. Membership on the board is now open to scientists who work for corporations convicted of major environmental crimes, and peer review is no longer the standard for validating scientific studies on which regulations are based. Politicians are systematically gutting regulations put in place to safeguard the public. They are doing it right here, right now. It's not just environmental issues. It also affects health, taxes, workers' rights, and programs that people have paid into over their lifetimes in order to have security in retirement. There are 500,000 deaths a year linked to smoking, and the warning labels on cigarettes may soon be gone because it interferes with tobacco sales. Data mining of personal information, class action rights being struck down, all in the name of profit for individuals and corporations who already have about half of the wealth of this country. Corporations now have rights, but not the responsibility that comes with those rights. They have immunity in areas where private citizens do not. It's becoming more important than ever to reverse the corporate takeover of our government. Most of these damaging decisions were decided by a vote of 5-4. There are 324 million people in the United States, and yet five unelected men, started us down this path, and we continue on this path because of the massive amounts of money now being spent to buy decisions favorable to corporations. New Hampshire is close to being the 17th state to propose an amendment, and it is important to continue the momentum. So I urge the Flavanna Board of Supervisors to pass a resolution to amend the Constitution.
Thank you. Anyone else would like to speak to the board?
Madam Chair, members of the board, my name is John Wilkinson. I live at 14 Wisteria Way at Lake Monticello. Before I retired, my career included a period of time in which I was CEO of a corporation. It would have been difficult for me to run the business I did had it not been for the benefits that incorporation provided me. As you know, corporations relieve investors of personal liability for the actions and the failings of the company. They are able to do so because they are independent entities, separate from the investors and even from the employees. They can enter into contracts, sue and be sued, and be held totally accountable for meeting their regulatory requirements. Corporations are good economic policy tools. For these beneficial attributes to exist, nothing requires that corporations have the same rights that are recognized in the Constitution as being inalienable to you and to me. The Constitution doesn't even mention corporations. But the Supreme Courts, shortly after the Constitution was written, had lots to say. In 1809, a unanimous Supreme Court said, a body corporate cannot be a citizen within the meaning of the Constitution. Another court shortly after that said the only rights a corporation can claim are the rights which are given to it and not the rights which belong to its members as citizens. Before the end of that same century, a different court said the Constitution applies to natural persons, not to artificial persons. And yet, during the last 40 years, this obvious reality has been chipped away. The 14th Amendment was intended to make it clear that persons who were formerly enslaved had the same rights and equal protections as all other persons. Corporations claimed that this amendment gave them those same protections. And more recently, in addition to the 14th Amendment, the Supreme Court bestowed First Amendment rights upon corporations, including what was previously only an individual person's right of free speech. The consequences of that are alarming. For example, Vermont's right to know law required that companies who obtain milk from cattle injected with artificial growth hormone merely disclose this fact on the label. Monsanto argued that this violated its First Amendment right not to speak. Vermont's law was declared unconstitutional on the basis of the concept of corporate personhood. Apparently, in this case, a corporation's alleged First Amendment right not to speak trumped consumers' right to know what is in their food. Massachusetts attempted to prohibit tobacco advertising within 1,000 feet of schools. The Supreme Court declared this unconstitutional because it violated the free speech rights of Warlord Tobacco Company, Brown & Williamson Tobacco, R.J. Reynolds Tobacco, and Philip Morris Incorporated. Now, regardless of what you might think about these regulations and the many others that have and will be overturned, what ought to concern us all is our loss of power to establish policy through our elected officials. The resolution that Ms. Burkett has proposed to you is not anti-business. It is not partisan. It merely returns policy control to real people. Polls confirm that a vast majority of independents, Republicans, and Democrats rejected the Citizens United decision. 75% of American business executives surveyed recently described our new political system as pay to play. We need you to help us remove this discouraging impediment to self-government by confirming that constitutional rights are intended for natural human persons, not artificial ones. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Talley.
Madam Chairman, yes, members sir. Of the board, my name is Al Talley. I live at 14307 James Madison Highway in Palmyra. I'm a little surprised that I saw this resolution on your agenda. And I'm a little surprised at what I've heard here, because what people are talking about is not the Citizens United case. They're talking about the environment and tobacco advertising, and somehow huge corporations are going to control our government more than they do. I like our Constitution. I'd say I love it. I have a lot of respect for it. It's set up a really wonderful system. It's lasted a lot of years, and we don't amend it lightly. It's not a Band-Aid fix. We don't amend the Constitution because we don't agree with a Supreme Court decision. The Supreme Court reverses itself from time to time, as it did with the Citizens United case, as it would have in a number of cases. We won't talk about all those. But anyway, you've read the resolution, presumably. I'm not going to pick it to pieces. There are a lot of problems with that resolution. It's not well worded. Honestly, it's not factually accurate, in my opinion. I wanted to see What is the Citizens United case that everybody's so upset about? Do you all know the background? Well, let me tell you, because I don't see anybody nodding their head. In 2002, Congress passed the Bipartisan Campaign Reform Act, otherwise known as McCain-Feingold Bill. That prohibits corporations from electioneering communications 30 days before a primary election and 60 days before a general election. Now, a gentleman named Michael Moore, you may have heard of, a filmmaker, produced Fahrenheit 9/11, very critical of the Bush administration. Citizens United is a nonprofit corporation largely funded by smaller contributors, and they support conservative causes. They went to the Federal Election Commission and they said, hey, he can't do this. He can't show this movie 60 days before an election. It's prohibited under McCain-Feingold. The Federal Election Commission said, nah, he's doing this as a commercial venture. This is a legitimate commercial enterprise. It's not electioneering. He can do it. So Citizens United said, we're going to become filmmakers. And they did. And they produced several documentaries between 2005 and 2007. 2008, they produced a documentary. They called it Hillary the Movie. Hillary the Movie was very critical of Hillary Clinton and her campaign to become president at that time, and the Federal Election Commission said you can't show that. You can't show that. It's not commercial. It's not a commercial venture. It's purely electioneering. Citizens United went to court. District court said you can't do that. It went to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court said, and I'm going to quote here, and the five people were the majority. There were four dissenters in that case. The Supreme Court said, in their opinion, if the First Amendment has any force, it prohibits Congress from fining or jailing citizens or associations of citizens for simply engaging in political speech. You know, Thomas Jefferson believed in free speech. I do. Sometimes the only way that we, the people, can have any sort of effective free speech is to combine with other people, particularly in state and national elections. It takes a lot of money to get an ad to a national audience. So sometimes we do that through the corporate identity, an association of persons. You know, if we're going to compete with people like Michael Bloomberg, Bill Gates, Michael Moore, and other people, that's the only way small people can do it. I don't see Citizens United as being a problem for we the people. I see it as being a protection for us. The other point, they've got 2 points in this resolution, which you've read. One of them is we're treating corporations as persons. The other is that money is not speech, shouldn't be treated as speech. Well, money's how you make your voice heard in any sort of large situation. You have to have an ad, you have to campaign, you have to get your message out to people. I can't do it alone, you can't do it alone, but a group of people who may have formed a corporation can. And that's what Citizens United protects. Citizens United doesn't change the fact that corporations can't give political contributions to candidates. It doesn't change any of that stuff. It isn't going to fix any of the stuff they're talking about. It doesn't do away with PACs. Freedom of speech is very important. I think it's political speech is some of the most important speech we have. I think it would be a mistake to enact this resolution. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else like to speak to the board? If not, I will close the first public comments. And next we have public hearing. We have the fiscal year 16 proposed tax rate by our finance analyst.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Marianne.
I'm just here to talk briefly about the public hearing. Just wanted to remind everybody that since it wasn't an assessment year, we had to have a maximum tax rate proposed 30 days in advance of a public hearing. Normally, the tax rate goes in with a budget hearing, everything's done at once. But because of the Virginia Code and the fact that we did have an assessment that did go up, there was going to be an equalized tax rate, we did have to have a separate public hearing. That public hearing is today, and the maximum tax rate that we advertised was 93.5. Now, we have since, the board has since worked on the budget, and the advertised budget that we currently have out there is a tax rate of 89.9. So we just kind of wanted to clarify that for everybody, but we are having the hearing today on the maximum proposed tax rate.
Okay.
Anybody have any questions?
Any questions from Mr. Twigdale?
Thanks.
Okay. Now I will open the public hearing. Anyone who would like to speak on the fiscal year proposed tax rate, would you please come forward, address with your name, and give us your address, and you have 5 minutes to speak. Okay, if not, I will close the public hearing.
No further action required. We'll consider your budget, CIP, and the associated tax rates with that at your public hearing next week, and then you'll move to adopt the following week on the 15th, not the 18th.
Okay. All right, now we'll go into our action matters, celebrating children. It's nice yellow bags. And we have David will present, and I think he has some friends with him, right?
I do.
All right. Social services.
Well, let me introduce my coworkers. My name is David McLaughlin. I'm the Child Protective Services Supervisor at Luvana. I've been there about a year and a half now. And we couldn't, I wish we could
have. There are some others coming.
Yes, they are. Mm-hmm. Some people coming in late. There's some other people that are out in the field, so everybody couldn't come today, so I apologize about that.
That's
but we have Shannon Redmond, she's Child Protective Services Worker or Family Services Specialist 3. We have Karen Hebert, she's one of the supervisors. She supervises foster care and adoption and adult protective services. We have Rochelle Reed, who is a Child Protective Services Worker, Family Services Specialist 1. Ann Perkins, she's right back there. She does foster care prevention, and she works some adoption cases and does ongoing CPS and CPS prevention. And we have Michelle Tanner, who is our VU and child care worker. So I want to welcome you guys here. Thanks for coming to support me. Public speaking is really not my forte. But
obviously, it wasn't mine today either. So
yeah. So do you have the PowerPoint?
No.
Is it right there in front of you? Is that there?
I don't have one.
Oh, you don't have a PowerPoint.
Let me just look and see if there's one in there.
It's in the package.
It's in the package.
Is it?
That's
oh.
Thank goodness.
But he thought.
All right. When I looked on the agenda, I was a little worried. I guess, lightening it up with Child Abuse Prevention Month can only happen after a tax discussion. So
yes.
I think I'm fortunate in that piece of information. So April's National Child Abuse Prevention Month. So I always came last year, and I guess it's a yearly thing where we come to sort of give you a State of the Union on CPS and what we're doing in the county. So I figured I'd just take a few minutes to share some statistics from the last year, talk a little bit about how we do our job, and also share a little bit of information about how some changes in statewide practice have affected, you know, how we do our job and what we do in serving the families and kids in the community. So up here you'll see a few breakdowns of percentages, and this is really basically the types of reports that we received in the last calendar year. And I have a pie chart that I'll show you in a second, but we have, it may be a little bit easier to read. We accepted a total of 190, or received a total of 196 reports of child abuse and neglect in the last year. And let me forward it over, you can see the pie chart. It's broken down into types of abuse and neglect. And as you can see, if you're looking at it, the most frequent types of reports that we received were reports of physical neglect and then physical abuse. The red chart.
Physical abuse.
Physical abuse is the blue part.
Blue.
And the red part is neglect.
34%. How much? 34. Oh, okay. Oh, I stepped. It's blending in. Okay.
Okay. So you can see now sort of a breakdown of the reports and how we reacted to the reports. And I'll talk about track in a minute. A track is what we do when we receive a report. We determine first if it's valid, and then it has several tracks that it can go on. So you can see there another pie chart about the responses and types. There are outreaches, family assessments, and investigations for CPS reports. The first thing I want to talk about is validity. First thing we do when we receive a report in our office is determine whether it's valid. You can see there are four components that we use, criteria that we use to determine whether a report is valid. Basically, our age, is it a child under 18, the caretaker, who's the alleged abuser, neglector, is it in our jurisdiction, and that means does the family live in Fluvanna County, and then it has to, the alleged abuse or neglect has to meet the code section and definition for abuse and neglect. So first thing you do again is determine validity. If we determine that a report is not valid, every report, this is a local policy, every report we receive is responded to within 24 hours, number one. But if the report is invalid, our workers still contact the family. Sometimes that's a phone call, sometimes it's a home visit, sometimes it's a letter, depending on if we can reach them. So we reach out to them, see if there's anything they need. We let them know that a report was made, and try to offer services if the family wishes to participate. If the report is determined to be valid, there are two tracks that we can place it on, either family assessment or investigation. So you can see, a family assessment, basically speaking, is the least intrusive track that we work on. We go in, work with the family to identify the issues at hand. We look at what the family's strengths are, and we try to identify services that we can recommend and put in place to help the family. The next would be an investigation. If it's determined to be an investigation, the main goals are to address the immediate safety needs of the child and determine, number one, if abuse or neglect actually occurred, and we're looking for a finding. An investigation can be either founded or unfounded. I'll explain that in a moment. We also determine in an investigation if the family can address the problems with the child still in the home and have everybody be safe. So if we determine that the investigation is founded, that means is that we use preponderance of the evidence at 51%. If we're 51% sure by our investigation and the evidence that we found, then it would be founded. And that means is the abuser neglector would have his record kept in the central registry for differing amounts of time depending on the severity of the abuse or neglect. It can be up to 18 years. So now I want to shift a little bit to talk about some of the stuff that I know Ann is kind of working on, but the state's practice model has changed in the last few years to one of family engagement. So I think, you know, last year I talked about sort of the myths between or about CPS and that we just take kids into foster care, and that's simply not the case. The state has really promoted an agenda where we work with families. And if you can look at some of these, this is actually the state's mission statement on family engagement. So really what it says in a nutshell is that we believe children do best when they're with their families. We believe children are best served not in out-of-home placements while they're still in their home. And if a child does need to be removed from their home, we believe that all children deserve permanency. And the state has actually dialed back the length of time that a child can be in foster care. So the timeline has changed, and it's much less. Some of the reasons that they changed, trying to motivate for change, is there are just a large number of children in the state in foster care. And I can say that, especially in Fluvanna, our caseloads have gone way down in terms of foster care cases, and we're working on trying to work with people in either foster care prevention or CPS ongoing cases to prevent removal from the home. I have a few more. Again, this is just more of their mission statement. All of this is available, too, on the VDSS website if anybody's interested. And the other thing that we recently started, and this is the last thing I'll talk about, and then Mr. Hayslip talked about it a few months ago. So the state passed a law that we have to, every locality in the Commonwealth has to form a multidisciplinary team that responds to sexual abuse and serious physical abuse. It's
And this has to be in place by July 1st of 2015. I wanted to let you know that we've already started our MDT. You can see what it requires. And I'm going to show you the members. So we've had two meetings up until this point with all these folks present. We're still in the process of finalizing our protocol and getting our memorandum of understanding together with all the agencies. So specifically what we do is we meet monthly and we review reports of abuse and neglect. The purpose of doing that with all these folks is that so kids get what they need. They don't fall through the cracks. Every agency has specific resources and expertise to bring to these families and children. So we're required to staff every case that is either ongoing or a new case. We have to staff them every 60 days at least until they're closed. So what it does is it enables us to follow a child and family to the conclusion of their case with any of these agencies. So I think we're ahead of the curve on that, so I feel really good about that. And I want to thank everybody that's listed there as members because they were helpful in getting this up and running. So last thing I wanted to say is thanks for letting me come and brief you a little bit. And don't forget to come to the Celebrating Children's Fair on April 11th, Harrisburg Elementary from 10 to 12.
Thank you.
You.
And thank you for the bag of goodies,
yes,
as usual.
And while you're all here, I'm going on 2 years now on the Social Service Board. Mm-hmm. And it's given me quite an education. And I want to take this opportunity to thank the folks that work there. They do God's work. And I can't imagine a day in your life, in your lives, and I couldn't do it. So thank you very much. I know we don't say it enough, and you need it and appreciate it.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. And it's a very nice proclamation, too. Written very well.
Yes.
So thank you. Thank you for coming. And thank you for keeping us up to date on all the work that you do.
You do want to get the right date on it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I saw April 2004.
Yeah, they need
that
the
last
right date
paragraph on it. It's now corrected there the for us. So you're going to go down as 2015.
It's corrected in the motion.
Now that's fine.
Okay.
Yeah.
I move the Fruitvale County Board of Supervisors approve the proclamation proclaiming the month of April 2015 as Celebrating Children's Month in Fruitvale County in observation of Child Abuse Prevention Month.
Okay, do we have a second?
Second.
It's moved by Mr. Ullenbrook and second by Mr. O'Brien. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Chair votes aye.
I'd like to see this proclamation every month, mm-hmm, not just this month.
Okay. Next on our action matters is Resolution Against Citizens United. Mr. Nichols.
Yes, ma'am. You'd asked to have this on your agenda this time, and there was several people have spoken to this, but the resolution was in your package, and that's the one that's there. And so, pending your discussion and decision.
Okay. I know. It's a long resolution, and you've all read it, and we've heard comments, yeah. So anyone would like to...
I just want to make a quick one, and it's got nothing to do with whether I agree with this or disagree with this. I feel that this is not the County Board of Supervisors' place to make this kind of resolution. And I would just like to stress that this board in the last few months has been more united and really worked the way a government board should work. We've worked in compromise. We've worked with respect. And in doing so, we came across with what we talked about tonight as a good product of goodwill and a voice of everyone here on the board, inclusiveness in it.
That being said, I will not be part of a divisive proclamation resolution involving this board in the middle of, especially in the middle of budget season when we haven't made a final vote yet. In other words, this is regardless of who's right and who's wrong, it has nothing to do with the county government. And for the life of me, I don't even know why it's sitting on the agenda, and that's all I have to say.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Ellenberg. Anyone else would like to make a
comment? Sure, I have a few thoughts.
All right, Mr. Van.
You might imagine. I think it has a lot to do with county government, and here's why. Is when we basically abdicate our rights to corporations, we don't have a government. And that's one of the things that's being brought forth to us right now, is that we are essentially being asked to say from a handful of citizens here that the process is broken. And I think it's a very important and loud voice when leaders in the community say, this isn't really working. Constitution doesn't say we the corporation or the corporation of the corporation. It says of the people. We represent those people. I think it's an easy statement for us to say, let the Constitution work the way it was intended to work, which is when there are problems, when black people can't vote, when women can't vote, when corporations want to take away our rights to vote, let's talk about it. And that's all we're really doing here, is we're creating a process where we can talk about it. And that process is a process whereby individuals get together and they say, how can we change this and make it better? There's a check and balance system in our Constitution. We had 5 Supreme Court leaders say, hey, we think this is the right decision. We now also have a check and balance that would allow a constitutional amendment to say, hey, we the people don't think this is the right decision. And I think that's an important process to let flow through. I think when we don't let that flow through, we hurt our democracy. We also heard somebody speak about One Virginia 21, also really important too. When we basically create districts that lock in who's going to do the bidding for us, and then we create corporations that lock in and support those people, and then we wonder, why do people not get involved in the election process? Why do people not care? They don't care because they've given up. They don't care because they think that it's a rigged system. They don't care because they know they're going to lose. And when you say, hey, a corporation is a person that can do that, well, a corporation can spend $1 billion on a campaign if it wants to. And there are people that have that kind of money. They can spend $1 million. When we said slaves should have a 1/5 vote, did we also turn around and say, hey, American people should basically have a 1/1 millionth vote to a corporation? I don't think that makes a lot of sense. You know, I think that we have an obligation to represent our people by saying, this is an important conversation. Agree or not agree. It doesn't have to be divisive. It just says, let the process move forward. You know, there have been 11,539 by, you know, Wikipedia, constitutional amendment proposed. There are only 33 constitutional amendments. Mm-hmm. You know, that process isn't really working too well to begin with, right?
It's because the Constitution was set up
to make it difficult.
No, and it should be. That's difficult. That's the fiber of this.
But why should it stop right?
That's the fiber of this country, and the Supreme Court is part of the decision-making process.
And there's a check.
And if you don't like the decisions made, the decision made by the Supreme Court, there's another chance. The Supreme Court has changed their mind numerous occasions.
The chance is also by allowing this process to go forward.
And if you go into who funds political elections, mm-hmm. PACs are huge in this.
And if you
can be a candidate, but not a declared candidate, and you can go on speaking tours and collect $250,000 a night and put it towards you and into your PAC that you're going to spend, by the way, it's all different regulations.
So you're just pointing out that it's even more broken.
That's right. It's got nothing to do with the corporation. Okay? And so the problem. It's grown because of cost of advertising over the last 40 years. It's grown over the cost of just doing the business of running for an election. I mean, a state senator just said the other night to me, he said, I'm going to spend $750,000 on an election that I make $18,000 a year. What sense does that
make? Yeah, well, exactly. And so why are we allowing that kind of money to control the system?
And as far as you and I go, it's the same thing here.
Yeah,
but we make $8,500 a year and spend $16,000 on an election. It doesn't make any sense.
That isn't the point.
It's a fact of life.
The point is we shouldn't have elections that cost millions and millions of dollars because the system is basically encouraging that.
Once again.
You know, when this happened, the only real medium of communication was through the people, right? Because they had papers. That was it. Now you have instant information. By the way, not only do the corporations have instant information, they know exactly your predications, your predilections or whatever how you're likely to vote, right?
That's why
so
I
they can
use
target you, right? Right? They can target you and say, here's what's important to you. Let me talk to you about that. We're being swayed and we're being pulled away. And the more money that goes into the system, it isn't getting better. Right?
I don't disagree with you.
It isn't getting better, and you don't disagree with that.
I don't
then
disagree.
Let this process move
no,
forward.
No, but I disagree with it sitting in front of five members of the Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors. And on top of that, if things are as serious as you say they are, and I'd rather be sitting at a cup of Joe's over a cup of coffee debating this with you,
I
would do that in a heartbeat, but not sitting here. And this, if we're talking about the Constitution of the United States of America, that to me is much more serious and important than advertising the budget of the Fluvanna County, which is 25,629 people, for 2 weeks in the Fluvanna Review, 2 weeks we're required to do that for a decision on a small county budget. Now, this resolution
says one thing only.
I promise you, 9 out of 10, maybe even more, I'm just giving it a benefit. Residents of Fluvanna County don't even have a clue what this is about. And on top of that, I called another supervisor the other night and said, you know, I am not the brightest bulb in the pack, but I don't understand this thing.
Says, and I read it in the Bible.
We're going to amend
the Constitution.
It's a lot more in there than
that. No, it says here are some problems.
All I'm saying to you is I can make sense out of a $60 million budget, and I can't.
I'm just saying
it doesn't belong here at the Board of Supervisors.
And the people that we represent think this is important. We had more people show up
here.
Sad. It's too bad they're out of the room right now, but we had more people show up here about this particular issue than had show up about the budget.
When the lack of involvement
is this pathetic? Is this pathetic? You know what? I'm okay if people get upset because the board came in and said, hey, we think things are broken in government right now. That's what this basically says. Things are broken in government. It doesn't provide the fix. Okay, it says, let's get together and talk about this. That's what the process
is. No, it doesn't. It says amend the Constitution of the United
States. Yeah, and there are only a couple of ways to do that. And one of them is through a convention, and that may be the way it comes through. When she talks about the 18 states, that's the way that might happen. But we're letting a process move forward. If it was just as bad for five people to make the decision on Citizens United, it's just as bad for us to say, you know what, it's going to stop right here as far as the county is concerned. If this gets out into the paper and people care about it and they're upset about it, let them come back over here and complain about it, okay? You can have somebody come in and create a proclamation that says, I think the Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors should reverse its position and that we love giving away our rights to corporations.
We can have somebody do that.
And you can support them if you want.
I'm not supporting that.
We're not stopping that process.
I'm saying that it doesn't belong here in front of this board for this exact reason. We're in the middle of budget talks and we're arguing over something we got no business talking about.
I think we have a lot of business talking about. I think the minute that political leaders stop talking about what's not working right and what is working right, Then we're out of business.
I've said my piece because I want peace.
Okay, I've said my piece.
Okay, anyone else would like to comment on the other side of the table? Mr. Weaver or Mr. Sheridan?
Well, first of all, I don't think this is a place that we start with to amend the Constitution. A lot of these other counties, cities, they're involved in all these other issues that they're not going to have anything basically to do with it. And certainly, I disagree with some decisions that the Supreme Court makes. But this is not the place to address this. I think Bob's right. All we're doing is creating dissension. I've heard this in other counties. And this really, to me, is not the forum and the place to get involved in this discussion. And I'm certainly not going to support it. And I've had several people to call me. I did not go out seeking information, but several people called were very much against this. So I don't see that there's any great support for it, and I don't think this is a forum for it, and I'm not going to support it. Be short and sweet.
Any other comments?
Madam Chairman, I have a couple comments procedurally.
Yes, sir.
And again, I want to emphasize to the board that I'm not taking a position as to the wisdom of the amendment proposed or not.
Yes.
But I want to make a couple of procedural issues. One, I cannot tell you that you could not make an argument the other way, but I'm not aware of any authority that the county has to take a position on this kind of issue as a county government. Now, clearly, each of you is entitled to express his opinion, but I'm not aware that the county has the authority to do that. This is a Dillon Rule question to my mind, and I think I'm not going to tell you that if you vote in favor of this, you are doomed and the county would be sued and would lose, but I think that's probably the better argument than that the Board of Supervisors has the authority to take that position. The second issue is that as you look forward, I am personally aware that there have been a number of constitutional amendments that have been, let's say, bandied about on a huge variety of issues and other things other than constitutional amendments. I know, for example, that Charlottesville has been declared as a drone-free area. The city obviously has no authority whatever over that. That's a federal issue. It's done purely for political grandstanding. And the city has done a number of other things, too. Don't be surprised if you take a position on this issue if you're not asked to take similar positions on other issues, which may be tremendously varied. And you may think those issues are good, you may think they're bad, but if you take a position on one issue, you're very likely going to be asked to take positions on other issues. They're substantively different, but procedurally similar. I think you're probably risking opening up a pretty serious can of worms. The third issue is that I do not purport to be an expert on the procedure for amending the Constitution, except to say that it's my understanding, my memory of the United States Constitution, that there are two ways to amend it. One is by particular actions in Congress. And the one that comes immediately to mind to me is the Equal Rights Amendment, which was a woman's rights issue, 30 years ago or whatever it was. If you do it that way, the issue has to be voted on in Congress, and I believe it's a two-thirds majority. It's a supermajority, whatever it is. And it has to be ratified by the votes of, I believe it's three-quarters of the legislatures of the states. The legislatures of three-quarters of the states. That's one procedure. I believe it is the case, I stand to be corrected, but I believe it is the case that every amendment that's been successful in amending the Constitution has been adopted in that fashion, gone through Congress. The other way of doing it is with a constitutional convention. And I infer that's not what the resolution says, but I infer from the comments of at least one of the supporters that that's what's contemplated here. That that a supermajority of the states call for a constitutional convention, then it must be convened. I'm not aware that there's much authority over the procedure to go forward if such a convention is convened. But my understanding is that if it is convened, no one particular issue is limiting as to the subject matter. So that if such a constitutional convention were convened, it's possible that some issue could be raised that's not contemplated by any of the people that voted for the adoption of the convention. I've heard that described as a runaway convention. I'm not telling you it would happen. I don't think it's ever been tried, so I don't think anybody can tell you yes or no. But it is a significant question. So I think if you were, leaving aside whether you have the authority to do it at all, if you were voting on this, I think you would have to, assuming your vote is influential in having the convention called, I think you need to be very circumspect before you exercise that authority, lest you fall into a pretty substantial risk of unintended consequences. So with that in mind.
So a couple of questions then. So we can proclaim that we're in favor of child, month, but we can't proclaim that we're in favor of, promoting this idea. There's a difference between the two?
Yes.
And what is the difference?
Because one of your duties is to inhibit child abuse.
And one of our duties is to protect the Constitution as well, our interpretation of it, perhaps?
You are sworn to protect the Constitution,
right,
as an individual. That does not mean the county as a corporate body. It's interesting that we have this debate because that's precisely what's going on here. The action that's being contemplated here has nothing whatever to do with the right of any citizen, this member of this board or otherwise, to take a position for or against this or any other issue. You're perfectly entitled to do that. The issue is whether this corporate body is entitled or should take a position.
Well, I'm the only one that hadn't spoken, so I will say this. You brought up 3 points. Number two, that's the first thing that hit my mind, that we'd be opening up a Pandora's box, something that we wouldn't be able to control when it got open, just be able to let it go. Second thing is I have talked to some of the legislators, and that is one of the things that people are fearful of, and maybe it's a wrong fear, but that when you open up a constitutional convention, there is not going to be one topic. They can talk about it and try to change anything that they want, whatever they bring up. And that was one of the fears that they spoke out to me about that. So
I think that's unfortunate in this respect, Michael, and I'll only say this. I'm just saying that the idea of somehow or another people getting together to talk about major issues for our country.
I'm just saying they're changing it.
Constitutional convention, so they still have to, still have to sit down and say, yes, we're in favor of this, okay? And that process was intended, and the Constitution was intended to be a living document, okay? It's not intended to be easy, but I think if we get 34 states basically together to say, hey, we think this is important, all right, and yes, in that process some other things come out, okay, maybe people want to inject fear into that process and say, there are a whole bunch of idiots out there and something crazy is going to happen. But something good can also happen, right? There was a constitutional convention, and look at what we have. Right. I mean, there were people getting together and saying these are the issues that are important to our country when we were fighting the tyranny of the British, right? And they got together and they created something that we all now say we love, but we don't want to change, right? Because it was so perfect. But it isn't a perfect document because situations change. The internet didn't exist at that point in time. You didn't have data mining companies that could basically tell you how you're going to do, what you're going to do in the morning, how you're going to get dressed, what you're going to wear tomorrow. Right? Those things didn't exist at that point in time.
That's a good thing.
No, I know, but I'm saying that the idea somehow or another that we, should be scared of a constitutional convention because it's going to run away on us, I think that's a shame in the sense that we should be proud of the fact that we are bringing these issues to the people so that they can talk about them. That's the way I look at it. I'm not, you know, I understand what you're saying. I'm just saying,
okay.
Hey,
you've spoken your
opinion. Just,
you've
said, you know, just, sure.
But everybody's entitled to it.
You know, but it's something about what our attorney said that almost what I heard said there are some resolutions that we should not be involved in. And what are the criteria of that? A lot of resolutions come through. I never have a problem because they are local. You know, we have resolutions for a lot of things. So can you clearly say that this is a resolution or there are some resolutions that we shouldn't even consider and it wouldn't be on our board packet? Is anything that clear with what you said, Mr. Payne?
Well,
That would help. The
touchstone mm-hmm. is what is the county's authority?
Mm-hmm.
So okay. If, for example, this board adopted a resolution, and I'm making this up, I'm not suggesting this is what you do, that the board memorialized the General Assembly to revise the gas tax
mm-hmm.
because there's a need for additional transportation funds. That would be a matter of immediate public concern in Fluvanna County. It would not be a, it would be a local issue for practical purposes. We don't have taxes that we can spend on roads. We know we have road problems, so you memorialize for that purpose. A similar resolution might be that the General Assembly minimize unfunded mandates for local government because that directly affects the county's ability to meet its obligations and its other needs within its means as a tax gathering entity. So that's the first issue. The second thing to my mind is whether there's simply an expression of, if you will, an expression of principle that, for example, I think it was last month, you had a resolution where you congratulated a young citizen for being elected an Eagle Scout. That's a purely personal matter. You're not suggesting any affirmative action by the government or the county government or any other government. It's a laudatory thing. I think in the case of the Celebrating Children's Month, both of those apply because I think protecting against child abuse is a proper function of county government. And I think it's also a matter of publicizing to the citizens of the county the nature of the problem. I think let me hit on the city because they're such an easy target. I think if you come out and say, Fluvanna County hereby declares itself a drone-free area, drones are not permitted in Fluvanna County. I can tell you right now, that's absolutely void because that's entirely in the hands of the federal government for regulating air travel. If you were to do that, I would tell you that you don't have the authority to speak on that as a corporate body. You certainly do as a citizen. So I think the touchstone is whether it's within the scope of the whether any particular matter is in the scope of the county government. Again, I'm not going to get into the subject of these other issues that have been proposed for constitutional amendments. But there have been a number of them that I've heard of. And I'm not going to get into the merits of this because you heard Judge Talley presented one view, other citizens presented the other view. I'm not going to get into mediating between those citizens' views. But one thing I will tell you, that if you have group of citizens that wants to propose something like this, they are entitled to do so. And you are not entitled to tell them that you won't listen to them. So these citizens have a view and they feel strongly that this is the thing to do. I will guarantee you that sooner or later, if the word gets out that the Board of Supervisors is taking positions on matters of national politics rather than local politics, other issues are going to come to your attention, and you're going to have to give those too. And those may be issues that are not so sympathetic.
So as our attorney, what is the bottom line? What is your advice?
Well, I think your action doesn't have any force of law.
Okay.
First of all. So if you do it or don't do it, it is not an expression that the county, that's the way the law is going to be in the county. I have considered the issue, is there a remedy for a citizen who disagrees with this position? There may well be. It's probably totally illusory. But if you're spending county money proposing something that you have no authority over, that's a misexpenditure of money.
Okay.
Now, does it matter? In this case, it probably doesn't, because it's probably so small that it's insignificant.
What if we, we have a vote here. If we have majority says yes, and as chair, can I sign a resolution with part of the supervisors in agreement?
I think,
or
if you have a motion.
Usually a resolution, most of the time, everybody's a majority.
If you have a motion and it's in order,
mm-hmm.
and it's approved, then whether you sign it or whether the clerk simply witnesses it, that's the action of the board. And that's the way life is. You have five members. If you have three on one side and two on the other side, that's the action of the board.
Okay.
I think you made a couple of excellent points. But I also think that, and you made a point that sort of cuts both ways. You said, you know, we're publicizing to the county that this is an issue, to use your words, when we're talking about child prevention. I think, likewise, when we send a statement out here, we're publicizing to the county that this is an issue. And I hear your major point, which is, you may be opening a can of worms, and B, you may have other proclamations come up or other requests such of this nature. And you're right, some of those we may not agree with. I mean, we've been asked today, as a matter of fact, to consider supporting the redistricting process, changing the redistricting process.
Which, by the way, there is a case that says that's unconstitutional.
And you know what? Again, I'm just saying, hey, let the people get together and talk about it and figure that out and make an amendment if necessary or not. You know, but to me, stopping the process by just simply saying, and I mean, we're not stopping the process because we're talking about it. So the fact that we're having this conversation is in fact good, whether or not we pass or don't pass. I think that in itself is a good process alone. But to me, as a political leader, to basically, you know, not bring forth the you know, request, if you would, that a citizen comes up to us and says, hey, here's something that's of concern, and think about it and talk about it, is part of the reason why people are frustrated with politics and frustrated with politicians, because they simply don't think they are listening to them. And I can think of very few issues as important to the well-being of every American than the health of our Constitution and the health of the political process. And that health, when people are essentially, you know, not paying any attention and they're giving it away, is going to be eroded. And so for me, in particular, this is an important issue. I'm not going to take up every issue. I'm not going to be in favor of every issue. But I really do think when we basically allow money to control the system, when we allow the redistricting to protect the system, we're giving away our rights. And that's a real problem. So for me, advertising that this is a problem for the people That's what I think we're doing in this motion. That's all I think we're doing in this motion. We're not saying anything other than we should talk about this.
Make the motion.
I will.
So just, I pull up the screen. We have, you know, years and years of resolutions, and I just went scanned through the back of the last 8 or 10 years. Right. And there's nothing similar. I'm not suggesting either way either. Mm-hmm. But normally your resolutions are either directed to the state government, mm-hmm. where we have some input, or they are the locally things, National Crime Rights Week. You urged the governor to pass a timely budget last spring mm-hmm. with the resolution. Many counties did that. But anyway, so... Right.
Just bring up the motion.
We've got 40 pages of those you can look at.
Bring up the motion so we can make his motion.
The other thing is, I think that the citizens who came forward with this, they're still going to continue their work. I mean, they're going to push what they believe in, and it's not the end. I don't know if there's a circulating petition that people just sign. A petition who agree with this, I don't know, but there may be other opportunities, you know, that they're not going to stop right. because we're not.
Yeah, and I think we do what we do not,
and we have had a healthy conversation. So we have a motion.
Go ahead.
I move that the Board of Supervisors approve the resolution to amend the Constitution to correct Citizens United.
All right. We have a motion. Do we have a second? Okay, we don't have a second, so the motion dies. Or, I hate that word, dies. What is another better word?
Fails.
It fails. Is that
might
bad?
Be a good word for
the motion without a second fails. Thank you all so much.
I still like it.
Yes. All right, next we have parks and recreation rental fees update.
Madam Chair, members of the board, with the investment that the county has made in regards to the Pleasant Grove House Museum and the permanent stage at Pleasant Grove, I'd like to bring to you all's attention options to update our current fee structure. A couple years ago, well, let me just point this out really quick. See the logo up to the right? That's our new department logo. Mm-hmm. After much consideration the last few months with staff and our Parks and Rec advisory team, we've come up with this nice, fancy
logo. What kind of bird is that?
Eagle.
It is an eagle. A lot of people say it's a
one of those. Sometimes I say it's a buzzard.
That's what, it's not a buzzard.
In my mind, it's an eagle because the Carisbrook bottom, I see them.
In fact, I saw some of them this morning, so you better watch out.
And it's going to eat all your butterful buzzards.
No. Sorry to get off track.
Should be a Canadian geese, right? Get some off.
Yeah, I like this thing.
It gets people talking more than our last logo. So, so with that, a couple years ago, I originally came to you all with requests to update the fee structure. Tonight, we'll just be looking at everything, but in the highlighted information, we're going to focus on the permanent stage. Some additional furniture and fixtures that we've purchased in regards to the museum. As you can see, the permanent stage, round tables, the kitchen, and a reading room at the house.
The water.
The highlighted in red words are what we're requesting to as the new fees. So the stage would be $100 per hour. That includes the electricity. We basically went off of the pole barn. It's pretty much the same square footage, and we thought that was fair just to offer it at pretty much the same rate as the pole barn is. The Pleasant Grove House Museum, we have a small meeting room that could fit comfortably six folks. That's probably the max. We went off of our current room rate down at the community center. It's a little bit smaller than those rooms that normally can house anywhere from 15 to 20 folks. So we thought that was a fair price at $10. Per hour.
Now your kitchen, do you have a stove in there? Yet?
We do not. We don't have space.
It's a warming kitchen, essentially.
It's a warming kitchen.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, not a cooking kitchen.
Correct.
That's going to be my only thing is I was looking at that and going, there's probably more things to break in the kitchen than there are in your room.
Yeah, it's essentially a catering kitchen where people bring the catered food in and keep it warm for receptions and things like that.
But they're already paying for space.
Right.
Anyway.
Right.
So they're really...
Well, this would be an additional fee because we would have to also hire staff to come and open the facility to make sure nobody's coming through the doors and disrupting displays or anything like that where they weren't supposed to be. So this is just a rental room rental fee per hour. The additional staff fee at the bottom would also pertain to the right. Pleasant Grove House Museum.
So any event, let's say, just throw one out there, Old Farm Day, mm-hmm. if they want to use the stage, they're already renting Pleasant Grove.
Right. So that we're going to get to that.
Now we're going to add $100 if they want to rent Pleasant Grove, but off the stage.
Right. So with the addition of that amenity, exactly. I'm also requesting an upgrade or update to our special event form. Mm-hmm. And we're going to get to that in a second. So this is just for somebody. If you want
piecemeal?
It's coming.
Well, this is the piecemeal. If you wanted just the stage, then you have the option of just getting the stage. If you want a piece of the park, then you have the option of getting a piece of the park.
So if you want a wedding in a pole barn, you're not renting the stage.
You can.
You can.
If you want to.
That's how our special rent.
If you're not renting the stage, no, if you're just renting the pole barn.
Right. That's what I'm saying.
Right. Yeah.
It's piecemeal.
It's a sequential, this is a sequential presentation, but almost everything we have in the park
right.
has a piece price, because most people don't want to rent the whole park.
Sure.
Well, you can have several groups in there. You can have several groups, is that not true? Well, one on course, stage,
and we've had multiple events on the same day.
Right. And so on.
Right. We had a wedding the same day as the wine festival last fall. And the wedding was in the back of the property. We moved the wine festival to the front of the property, but they paid their fees, and the chamber paid their fees for the other areas. So
yeah.
And how we usually work that out is the first come, first serve. So if somebody wanted the pole barn for a birthday, we would contact them and say, we've had a request for the stage. Would that be okay if you know, we had another group rent down the hill from you all?
Right. Good.
If they're fine with that, we'd move forward. If not,
right.
Okay. Sorry.
Oh. Real quick, mm-hmm. and you're probably going to answer this one down the road, and I'm probably getting ahead of myself. The athletic fields are renting per hour. Does that include the practices, or is that $3 per player per practice?
So that's that includes practices.
Do they have to come back?
That's a one-time league fee per season.
I figured mm-hmm. you were going to answer that.
Yep.
Now, if you just a couple of neighborhoods that have 9 players each and want to go down in the summer and play some baseball.
Free. You unless they that. Want it reserved for their personal use.
So you can go do that. Mm-hmm. It's not locked.
Sure.
So everything in the park has gotten a bunch of his buddies and gone down there and just.
And that's totally
and
fine.
Gone and just used it that's as long as nobody was there.
Yeah. Everything in the park is free unless you want it reserved for that specific time or place, because then they're paying for the privilege of keeping it for you rather than somebody else. But you can go to the ball fields anytime. You can go to the
public pavilions.
You can go to Remo
but
Park.
But if somebody shows up, you have to...
If they've got reservations, yes.
They have to vacate or wait until you're done. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so, I mean, and that happens a lot, too. I mean, people, you know, families go to have picnics. You know, but if they want it reserved, like for a family reunion picnic, and they want the pole barn specifically, then there's a fee for that. A nominal fee, but fee.
So are there any additional questions before we go to the next slide? This six-foot round tables, right now we just have flat tables or square. These round tables will account at least 8 folks. And since we've upgraded at the museum, mm-hmm. We've become more of a destination or attraction type venue.
Yes.
We're getting there every day, getting better. These make sense, mm-hmm. and since we're seating more folks, we thought we should bump it up.
So
and they're nicer tables as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mr. Sheridan had the question about the lead fees. Again, none of that is changing. These are fair prices.
The whole season.
Yes, sir.
Because mm-hmm. I just don't want to make it where it becomes so expensive.
Oh, no.
We had to start somewhere.
This is a season fee that that then gets them to use the field for their...
Right. And it holds us accountable and the groups that are in the facility.
So the only things changing are the new additions.
Just the red.
Just the red
reds on the screen. Right. Right. Yeah.
Our special event form, because we added some of the piecemeal products, we thought it was, and after discussion with staff and our Parks and Rec advisory team, we felt that we should update the special event form as well. 2 years ago when we implemented this paperwork, we had to start somewhere, start from scratch. With the addition of the stage, we felt that, you know, starting at $200, because $100.
That's cheap.
It's still pretty cheap. We do have a lot of requests of weddings and receptions under $250. You're not going to find a better deal.
That's right.
So if I wanted to have a rock concert and have...
That would be Woodstock.
We're ready to go.
I'm not that old. My wife is, but I'm not.
That's on the record, by the way.
If I wanted to have Aerosmith, who maybe are close buddies of mine, and they come and I want to rent Pleasant Grove for 5,000 of my closest constituents, friends.
Okay, invitation only, right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like a conservative Windig or something like that. Could I do that for $150?
You could fill this out. You could fill the form out. Just because you fill it out doesn't guarantee you the space. If we saw Aerosmith on there,
we'd say yes.
We'd probably get a corporation.
Sheriff's Department would be involved. Emergency services would get involved.
But if you were doing a concert, the same kind of concert, and your church sponsored this and bringing Newsboys in, a religious group,
right?
It would be half of that because the 501c3s get a
50%
reduction.
Off.
But the bottom line is you could virtually pay $1,250 in that and be a promoter.
Absolutely.
And have your own concert.
Sure. Yep. And Mr. Popowitz has been trying to grab some of those guys and has had them visit our site at Pleasant Grove Park. Yeah. With that stage, that helps us now.
Oh, Farm Day, what would you charge on that?
So our Farm Day would fall in the $2,500 to
$5,000. On the number of people.
Again, it depends. If they're over 5,000, they'd pay $1,250.
That's what I'm saying.
They fall in the $2,500 to $5,000 range, and they would pay half.
They've been bigger than that before. But.
The park can have how many people? Do you have any idea?
When we had someone come out and look at just the amphitheater area from the pole barn to the stage, his guesstimate was 6,000 to 8,000.
Oh, yeah?
Standing.
See, okay.
This can be
but nice. That's probably pushing
$45 a head?
That's probably pushing it. Most of our events fall.
Let me do the math.
The big events fall between 2,500 and 5,000. So.
Okay.
But you can see the increments that we've gone up.
I think we could pay the budget if we had a casino night.
You guys have any? You have any other questions regarding this before we go to the next phase?
Yeah. Any questions for Mrs. Smith? Mm-hmm.
And then just really quick, the farmers market. Again, this was decided a couple of years ago. They rent the area in front of the house now that the construction is gone. $100 for the year, so that's annual.
Last year, I stopped by there a couple of times. I don't know if we put any gravel down where they come off of the main road, but that got pretty muddy last year. And they had asked me, say, hey, you know, do you think y'all might be able to get some gravel?
They've moved back to the house because construction is done.
Okay.
And we're gonna aerate and oversee that area as well.
Yeah, and it's better shade, especially in the afternoon back by the house, because you got the big trees up front there, because they can be on that side. But it's nice to be able to see from the highway, but now you got the big sign out front. Eventually we'll have a roller, and so it's pretty visible, and it'll be a much better place than kind of driving through that field up front. So they were baked last year really bad out front there, so because there's no shade at all.
This isn't like it's Florida, you know?
Yeah. It's bad for a cold month.
If you're in the hay field in July, it's still hot.
Yeah.
It may not be Florida, but it's still hot.
You get 90 degrees out there.
And really, really quick, this is just a brief summary of the last few years of our revenue history. Along with programs, I wanted to put this slide on there regarding the rentals. And since we implemented the fee structure, we've become more consistent. We have a better checks and balances system. In FY14, you can see where the rentals jumped up from approximately 2,000 to 10,000. So between 12 and 13, we had a lengthy conversation with our Department of Finance to try and figure out what line items we're going to have and how we're going to post this and coordinate that.
I appreciate that because it was very consistent. Because in 2012, I couldn't get an answer.
So it's all been
and now it's since then. Now
it's easy to read. We all need to be able to see this.
I appreciate it.
Could be. I mean, the revenue still came in someplace, but how it was identified in the budget was difficult to follow, and so it's been solidified now, so you'll have some consistent numbers.
All right. Anything else, Mrs. Smith?
There's no action on this, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
You have to approve the fees.
Yeah. The fees.
The fees.
And now, the motion that's in your package is ever so slightly different, just a few word changes on here. And so this one is a clean one, and it makes more sense. There's just a couple word changes, so this is the motion.
I move that the Board of Supervisors approve the proposed fee structures for the Parks and Recreation special events for use of the Pleasant Grove House Museum kitchen and meeting room, rental of 8-foot round tables, and the permanent stage rental fee to be effective immediately.
Second.
And it's been moved by Mr. Sheridan, seconded by Mr. Weaver. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Chair votes aye. Thank you, Mr. Smith. Employees Ethics and Recognition Program, Ms. Parrish.
Good evening, Madam Chairman and members of the board. Hopefully, this isn't going to be as controversy.
Oh, boy. Oh, yeah. No problem.
I'm bringing the Tiger Team. Just to give a little background on the Tiger Team, it's a group of employees that volunteer to meet every month to address different projects to bring forth to help improve our working conditions. They review any issues that have been brought forth from employees through our employee survey, they look at policies, they look at different activities and everything, and they make recommendations.
They are not a governing body, by the way, but
no.
They are specifically chartered after the first personnel survey that we did after I came on board. And this year I tasked them to looking at three things: rewards and recognition program, annual required training, and new personnel orientation. So they've been working on those kinds of things.
Who made up the committee?
Pardon?
Who made up the committee?
They're all volunteers from every department, agency, and constitutional officers' offices.
How many in the group?
I think there's about 14, 15. They don't always, all of us at the same time, but through email and everything, we keep, do talk. We meet on the third Tuesday of every month, and we meet for about an hour, but then we email back and forth and share information and do research. They take the information that we discuss in those meetings back to their staff members, their coworkers, and then they share with everybody what their coworkers said. So it's a collaborative process to try and get things. So it takes a little longer for us to get things done, but it has more input, and it's been amazing. It's been an experience for me to be able to be a part of this group and hear all the wonderful ideas that they've come up with and thoughts and comments. The goal for this project, which one do I hit?
The other right way.
I hit it twice. There you go. We had two goals. One was to develop an ethics statement that would incorporate the county's mission and their goals. And then the other piece was to develop the recognition program, an employee recognition program that jumps off from that ethics statement.
Whose ethics statement is it?
The employees, Fluvanna County's employees.
But their ethics might not be the same as mine.
For this purpose, you're not a Fluvanna County employee. You have your own code of ethics for the Board of Supervisors.
Yes,
correct.
This is a staff member code of ethics, like many organizations.
And they brought it forward based off of your mission statement.
I think they built on those ethic statements are basically worthless, because if we have a certain standard of ethics, we follow those, and someone might disagree with my ethics, and I might disagree with their ethics. And I think it's a can of worms. I think
and it's not
thing.
Enforceable.
Why? It's not enforceable. I think this thing's a can of worms as you look through this whole thing here.
Brought the same thing up when we did ours.
Yeah, brought the same thing up here.
But this isn't all
many,
that.
Many of our auditors.
Code finish. Of conduct, I believe, was the word used.
Many of our audits do require us to have an ethics statement. I have used our standard of conduct as our ethics statement because we are required by different audits to have one, CSA audit, social services audit. So it is a requirement to have. The way I always describe an ethics statement is being a guideline. It's something that helps express this is the expectation of this organization, whether it's the county government or whether it's a private entity. It's a guideline on this is our expectations and these are what the county's expectation of how behavior should be. That's the same as our policies. This just kind of is a broader expectation.
And it's a lot shorter than yours, so.
Nonetheless.
Okay.
And they don't get on the radio.
Correct. Oh, well, hopefully.
There's a difference.
You never know.
There's a difference between politics and ethics.
I guess.
Well, sometimes there's not.
Okay. The ethics statement, the first piece of it, does summarize what we felt was the goal, the mission that was brought forth from the Board of Supervisors. The mission of Fluvanna County is to provide an excellent quality of life for its citizens and businesses through the delivery of competitive public service and programs in an efficient and effective manner.
Well, that's not anything new. That's your mission.
No, that's your mission.
That's your adopted mission for the county.
Then as employees of Fluvanna County, we will act with integrity in all relationships by dedicating our efforts towards earning the respect, trust, and confidence of all whom we serve, citizens, elected and appointed officials, and the county staff. This is the statement that we are stating that this is how we're going to accomplish, we feel. This is the general statement just saying this is how we will accomplish your mission. Then we brought forth the acronym PRIDE. This ties in our recognition program. PRIDE, we use the P for people first, R for respect, I for integrity, D for deliver, and E for excel. And that was how we felt that we can build off of this and talk about these values or standards or however you want to look at them. And we gave a short definition of what it was. It has gone through at least 50 different connotations from people coming back and forth and back and forth. But this is what the final one was that we brought forth. Based off of this ethics statement, then we started talking about how do we recognize when an employee not just does their job, what they're paid for, but goes that extra step above and beyond, that we want to recognize people who are doing excellence and do follow this pride in citizenship. So the first thing is people like to be recognized publicly. So we wanted to develop what we call our pride recognitions on a web base. We've talked to our IT department. It would not be difficult to have out there. Any time we receive a recognition from somebody that comes in, we'll post it out there. We won't necessarily post who's said it, but who is the person that's being recognized. Very much like the county administrator when he brings his kudos to these meetings. Also, it will be able that a citizen can go ahead and type it in. It'll be easier for them to do it. They can do it right there on the web page. If we receive it in letter form, we will put it up there. Also, coworkers will be encouraged to recognize when somebody goes that extra step and recognize them. And that's the day-to-day recognition that you're going to get also. The other piece of that was a Pride in Service annual awards. We wanted to recognize those few that just really shine, step out. But we didn't want it to be, we're going to play favorites. That was the hardest thing to try and battle. So when we came up with that piece, we decided three representatives. They're equally represented, each department, agency, and constitutional officer's office. They only serve 1 year. The next year, it'll be a different 13, so you're not getting the same people every year. And they look at what we've described in those standards under the PRIDE, and they look at what was sent in through citizens, co-workers, supervisors, through the web page recognitions. Therefore, then it's not one supervisor saying, I really like this guy, this person's really nice to me, they're easy to work with, so I'm going to give them this recognition award. So that would be a Pride in Service award, and that would be a total of six people. One would get the Pride in Service, and then five others would get a Pride award that would recognize one or more of the PRIDEs.
And it could be a person, an individual.
It could be a group.
A group, yeah.
And then we've also, in the program, is on the spot awards. It's going to be training and teaching people how to give on the spot recognition. A supervisor going up and saying, you did a really great job today, I really appreciate it. Or a coworker saying thank you. Sometimes that's all it is in the recognition. Sometimes it's, okay guys, come on, let's all go out to lunch. We really deserve a lunch. Or you guys put in a lot of work today. We've caught up. Everything's caught up. You got come in 15 minutes late tomorrow or something like that. Those type of on-the-spot awards. Or a certificate. A simple certificate to bring in and that to present to a staff member. We also recommend that in the program, continuing the annual service awards program. At that program, they would also, during that time, they would present the Pride Awards. And then also continuing the retirement recognition program. Are there any questions?
Do we have any questions?
Well,
Mr. Weaver.
No, there's some discussion. I don't remember.
Yeah, discussion.
Either one. Questions? Yes, discussion, whatever.
My first, I have a multitude of problems with this. Number one is this isn't a car dealership or Sears Craftsman Department or any number of other, it is an AT&T cell phone store where you can measure the salesman of the month or the employee of the month or and get your name on a plaque or get a $100 award. And there's very little argument over the recipient because there's a clear data that you can collect to show that that person shined. In this case, here we, I guess it's the word of the night, is divisiveness. And it's subjective. And it's gonna cause more aggravation and problems between our employees than it is than what the intent of the program is, and that's to enhance people being happy. When you're hired for, just my belief, if I'm hired to do a job, I'm not hired to do the minimum amount of work necessary to stay employed. I'm hired to do the best job that Bob can do with the abilities that Bob has, 40 hours a week or whatever amounts of hours I'm paid to work a week. And if Bob slacks off, Bob answers to Bob. That's the way I was brought up. I don't need someone to pat me on the back and say, Bobby, you're doing a really good job today. I don't need someone to give me an extra $100 because I already got hired at a salary to do the damn job that I was hired to do. And it's subjective. Anytime anyone's ever patted me on the back and said, Bobby, you're doing a good job, I got to wonder what they want from me, number one. And number two, it's subjective, so I take it as subjective. I don't need that. I've never needed that. Never expected that. Never got that from anybody at home.
And that's
as this world is getting to the point where you come in 10th place in Little League and you should get a trophy anyway.
Yeah.
Or you're terrible at something, but you need a pat on the back anyway saying, you tried and I'm really proud of you.
Well, you can get a trophy if you're last.
If you're last. That's what I'm saying to you. And this is getting out of hand. And now it's $5,000 that just last week we took $6,000 from the school budget to offset $6,000 in the county budget.
We didn't.
To keep this. There's $5,000 in that budget, in the budget for that money.
Yeah,
there's
$5,000.
There's $5,000 in last year's budget for this. I didn't see it in the budget myself.
I know, but it's not.
I did not see it in the budget myself. If I saw it in the budget, I'd have taken the $5,000 out of that and gave the school back their $6,000 that we took it out of somewhere else. I mean, we're spending money, and I warned the board about this 2 or 3 months ago when we started spending $13,000 on one thing and $27,000 on another item the same night. And then 2 weeks later, we're killing ourselves over $34,000. In fact, we weren't going to hire an employee that cost us $12,000. And that lasts all year. But we'll spend $13,000 on a program that lasts for about 4 hours at Pleasant Grove. Sometimes we don't make a lot of sense. And this one here is $5,000 that's $5,000 too much. The recognition program is subjective, and I don't care if it's 13 people over there or 13 people over there. You're hired to do a job, and you're hired to do a job at the best you can. And I'm not saying that our employees are paid enough or that they're not recognized enough. I'm not saying that at all. I'm trying to, once again, keep people from being divided. And this is divisive. I've lived in this atmosphere of awards and plaques and attaboys, and in the back, in the little huddles, in the little corners, it becomes a bitch session. And the intent is not for that to happen, but it happens. And
you sound like a communist, Bob. I mean, honestly, I mean, why don't we just let's
on tape.
Yeah, your idea is that people don't appreciate recognition, that they should just do their damn job. That's to use your words.
I'm just saying that it causes divisiveness.
It does not cause
why
divisiveness.
Why do you call me a communist?
Because that's what you sound like. You basically sound like you're saying, just do the mediocre bit, and you're
when
okay.
When you don't want to
call
me, I
just want to come back and say, well, that's fine, Bob, but I'm just saying.
No,
you know,
that's what you're just saying.
Okay, well, that's what you sound like. I'm, you know, I'm sorry you feel that way, but
that's about, I
can tell you right now, we're
going to get a smoke.
I don't think calling somebody a communism is necessarily insulting them, Bob, but that's okay. That's a first. Sorry.
Go ahead.
Apologies.
You have anything else?
No, I just honestly, I think that a fundamental part of any organization is to recognize its people. Maybe the amount is too much, but to argue that people should just do their damn job and they should just like it, I find that offensive to the people that work in this county. I think that the people that work in this county care about their jobs, and I think they also care about how they're performing their jobs. But by the same token, being recognized for being exceptional, that's pretty important. That shows leadership. That brings the bar up, right? And when we create a program that raises the bar for all of our people, that's a good thing. That's not a bad thing.
Yeah.
Okay. Maybe $5,000 is too much.
Well, it's highly unlikely there'll be anywhere near $5,000.
That would be the very max if we had a whole lot of groups.
I will say this much. My one thought process about the whole thing is I can see recognizing when we start paying bonuses for it. And I know that if
you go to one office and you pick one employee out of one office, the other three employees in that office are going to sit there and go, why didn't I get that? I did just as much as Tony did. And we can say, no, it's not. I mean, how do you go into the Commonwealth Attorney's Office and decide what employee does how much? When do you go to the Treasurer's Office and decide which employee does how much? I mean, I can see us giving recognition, and I think recognition is a good thing.
But you're a teacher.
Yes, ma'am.
And I bet you, you could award, and you know your kids, that kids who are doing even more.
I gave them a paper award at the end of the year for amount of effort.
Yeah, same thing. You may not have given them any. Sometimes we give them a McDonald's, something, can go and get a soda and so forth. That's in a certificate. I've never worked in all my years from wherever I've worked that there was not something to recognize people. And you can't control if somebody's in the corner. I'm not going to use that word, saying, I wonder why did she get that? You know, you may have that. You may. But 9 times out of 10, if the people put, you all work so hard, and you all put this together, you've thought about all those things. We've had Teacher of the Year here in Fluvanna County. I had someone tell me they wanted so bad, they were going to come here and tell us about how Public Works helped them move down here in Macca, just overwhelmed to tell me about it every time she saw me. That's an avenue for her to come and say that. I mean,
oh, absolutely. I'm not saying don't recognize them, but there's more than one Public Works person who went down there and helped them move.
Yeah, but
well, I mean, how do we sit there and pick one of them and say, hey, you toted 5,000 pounds?
No. That's not what that program does. That.
Let us explain the program, because obviously you all are misunderstanding what the program is about.
And one of the things I do want to express, the team did originally look at it without having monetary.
I want to make a point. We were talking code of ethics just now. We have a code of ethics. And disrespectful to other members of this board is part of our code of ethics. And it just showed, just now, in front of everybody, in front of all the employees here, what we think of our code of ethics.
So how are you going to vote on someone else's?
Wait a minute. First of all, you're the one that said it.
What did I say?
I have never insulted you.
You sound like the height of democracy, Bob. Does that make you feel any better? Oh, really? Okay, then sit down. I just said you're the height of democracy, right? Come on, sit down. You know that that's a comment, and you're just making a scene.
If I made
a
statement like that to you.
And what do you think I'd say? Call me an anarchist, Bob. I don't care.
I would never do
all right?
That.
I have an ability to react to the reaction. Anyhow.
You know that I would.
You know what? You can be a professional and sit down.
Bob, you need to come back and have a seat. It's not. That's okay. All right.
Apologies, Madam Chair. I did not mean to cause a fracas.
Right. You can't control other people's actions. So you've apologized. So let's move on.
When the committee put it forward, we struggled. As a matter of fact, this is 2 months later than what we had targeted to be able to bring it, because we took 2 extra months to try and figure out a way of presenting things that is not going to be costly, that's not going to cost money, and that would be appreciated, and people would feel they were recognized. Even the purchase of plaques, when we looked at the cost of that, wasn't much more than what we're recommending in a dollar value. And that's why we finally came back and said, you know, let's just do the dollar. We were talking about giving things like gift cards and stuff. Well, somebody may not want a gift card, but if you give them just money, they can do with it what they want. That's why the amount more, you know, they're open to, if you feel it's too much, The amount they feel that that one large prize, that is really recognizing somebody that shows the whole pride. It's not going to be, and they're going to have to be able to demonstrate why that person did.
And they're not even have anybody to even show that.
Essentially, it's Employee of the Year, Employee of the Month type program, and Employee of the Year is the top employee. Now, this is not a democratically elected where we all vote and we select it, but you've got a multidisciplinary team of people that are representatives of their departments, their constitutional office, their agency, that get together to look at what recognitions have happened through the year and which person or group of persons made the biggest impact in the county in supporting the ideals that the county asks us to support, in supporting the functions the county asks us to do. And I'm not suggesting at all that this dollars has to be that either. This is the proposal. But there's not a chance, I mean, not even a remote chance, that it's going to be $5,000 in a year. It's $1,200 for one person if there was an award. In another case, it's $250 for five other people. If it happened to be a team, it could be up to $1,000 max for a team. If it was a team of 10 people, it'd still be $1,000. If you want to lower those, take those out, do whatever you call. But I'm going to implement a staff awards and recognition program because I have the authority to do that. I just don't have the authority to do the dollars part without your concurrence, and that's what we're asking for. But the program is going to go into place.
Well, County Administrator, we have been doing this at our annual cookout ever since
All that you've done is service awards.
So all you have done, in my opinion, is to put it in a form and make sure everyone understands where you're coming from.
Ma'am, but
you've always done that.
At that meeting, at that annual awards, has traditionally only been service awards. Now, there was an Apple program some years back, but it's only service awards. If you've been here 5 years, 10 years, 15 years,
that still remains. But they have other awards.
Yes, in the past they did. But the problem was, and this is what came out of one of the employee surveys and why we tried to develop something different, was in the past it was felt from many employees that there was favoritism.
Yes.
That it was because it was their supervisors who determined who in each group, and it was like every year it was the same people.
And it was a human
person
because there's nothing codified in
and there was nothing that told them this is what you did and this is how it's under these standards.
So you have given it a better with input, everybody. I mean, it's much better than randomly, like you said, you will have people.
You're going to have people. People aren't going to be happy with our wellness fair. People aren't going to be happy with the Christmas part, the holiday party. They weren't happy with who we selected for the doors when we did the little contest on the doors. There's always going to be somebody. But based off of what was brought back by the Tiger Tea people when they talked to their staff members, employees wanted somehow to be recognized, but they didn't want it to become a fit. That was a huge, huge concern of the Tiger Tea.
She's trying to continue explaining it.
It was just a huge concern that they did not want it to, they wanted to control it as much so it would not be as much of a negativity.
Okay. Have you told
us
all we need? Okay.
Yes, sir.
All right. Now, with the comeback board, do you have any other comments, questions?
I guess I would say that it appears to me that there is some unhappiness with the way things have been done in the past. And it looks to me like you're having to pay somebody. You're saying, well, you're not doing 100%. We want to pay you extra so that you will do 100% or 110%. I've never really been a part of that. And to me, this thing is quite bureaucratic. It just rubs me the wrong way. It says, bonus payment of $100 per month for 12 months. The finalists for the annual Pride in Public Service Award will be published prior to the yearly service and recognition dinner. You know, and as you go through here,
certification for special, specific behavior. That's like saying, I don't like to use the example, but you're trying to train people to have certain behavior, and you're going to pay them. You know, I see that as...
Which one is that?
We reward what we value.
Yeah.
It seems to me that we rewarded people that we thought were doing a good job in the past.
There's been many times where I've recommended special payments or bonuses for staff for special accomplishments or projects. I certainly not ever recommended those just because I thought we should give away some money. I've recommended because I thought that specific person deserved and needed special recognition. The board, each time I've proposed those, has approved them. If you're not interested in doing those, then clearly my proposals are just proposals. But this program, well, I have concerns about the dollars too. I don't necessarily think it needs to be that many dollars. But all we've added to our program for the county is the Pride in Service annual award, and that's it. The rest of the stuff is already in place.
What are you saying? An hour or two of personal leave time to leave early or arrive late? Certainly, I can't imagine that Mr. Nichols, if you had to go be at the dentist at 9 o'clock, he wouldn't say, yeah, take an extra hour in the morning. I mean, you made it up in the evening. I mean, it's like this whole thing has to be so regimented. And I do think there will be creation of, well, how come he got it and I didn't get her? How come she got it and I didn't get it? It's just, to me, it really, really concerns me with some of the language in here.
I would suggest the board make recommendations on how we change it, because this is the proposal to the Board of Supervisors. And as I said, I'm going to implement a awards and recognition program that just strengthens what we have, but it doesn't put any more dollars out than what's out there. And I think the staff has taken a lot of time to work on something they thought reflected the values of county employees in Fluvanna County. That's the pride thing.
And I think that when we implement this and when we do our survey, the survey is going to show if the employees think that it's not, because you're going to have it on that survey somewhere about this program. That's when the employees have the opportunity to put in whether they like it or not, whether it's gone well or not, and then you go back to the drawing board.
That's what brought this was... Yeah. From the survey, that the employees felt like they weren't recognized and that they wanted it.
Consistent recognition program.
Consistent.
So it wasn't just willy-nilly and whoever wanted to do it versus somebody who never did anything.
Right. Because I've been wanting the boards and commission people who work here, volunteer in this county, to come to meetings once a month and twice a month, to come here and sit here so we can thank them, so we can see who they are.
And how are you going to get them to do that?
Know who they are.
here you say awards are at the discretion of the department head.
What page, Mr. Weaver, please?
We are on page. I don't see a page number on this.
It's not numbered.
1.5.
Right under 1.5 on the spot awards.
Okay. Awards.
Those are what's being done.
Discretion of the department. Yeah. To me, the word should be suggestion, and not only that. You know, I think that decision should be made by the county administrator, not the department head.
It's on the spot.
Oh, no,
and to me, you're starting to get in the buddy-buddy system. Are we
on the spot?
Right here. The ones that are on the screen, these on-the-spot awards, that's just good leadership by any boss. That's just plain old everyday stuff. It's just called on-the-spot awards here to let people know that that's what bosses do.
Yeah.
That's my opinion.
Mr. Weaver doesn't realize how important it is to me when he said
every constitutional officer, every department does that already.
I mean,
all we're saying is those are one of the ways you can recognize your employees.
And that's on the spot type of thing. When you say, Ms. Booker, we had a good meeting.
Yeah.
I mean, that makes me feel good.
Yeah, and I give you compliments, don't
you? You certainly do.
Yes.
And
you don't have to pay me. You don't have to pay me.
No, but
that's not being paid.
On the spot awards.
That's all that. I know that.
There's no pay for that.
I know that. But this is all about money, as I said.
Okay, so you're saying, you object to
take the money out of it.
To the way that it's designed and all, yes.
Would we be better off to step back from this
discuss it, make suggestions, and then come back and address it later.
Yeah. I think you'd be better off. Sure. Because we've had too much up.
You know, you could even take the money completely away and maybe say a plaque.
Well, what's wrong with the way that's been done here in the past?
Because we have no consistency, Mr. Weaver.
And that was one of the
We
have no written program. We have no consistency from department, constitutional officer, agency head. And what we'd like, and what the staff members have tried to put together, is a range of ways to recognize employees. Some of them would be bring them to a board meeting and recognize them there with a plaque, you know, when somebody does something good. Some would be just like this. You know, I had lunch for four of my staff members today, ordered in because I wanted to have a meeting at lunchtime, and I fed them lunch, and we had a big dessert, and we had a good time. We got a lot of work done. But that's what department heads
do. We do this all the time with children. Mike, you know that. We do this all the time with kids. And adults are not any much different than children.
And the only thing in here...
I'm going to tell you, this sounds like a tiger team at the middle school because I am
child-like.
So, and the only thing here that's different is the staff has created...
You got that right.
The people...
All of us are children in a way, aren't we?
At heart.
Yeah.
Well, here's the thing is, having a system in place, which Mr. Nichols is talking about allowing kind of a general recognition and a format in which people recognize that that's the pattern and the culture of the organization, that's important because now they understand why they're being rewarded. It doesn't necessarily feel like a buddy-buddy system, as you put it. Now, I can tell you as an employee, I'm looking at this and I'm thinking, this is what I need in my company, okay? Because this is a way that I can help motivate my employees to do the extra. I don't see anything wrong when we say to our customers, we're going to put you first, you know, or we're going to do the right thing for you, you know, or we're going to make sure that we heard you. I don't see anything wrong with the pride components.
Reward what you value.
Yeah, exactly. So all we're doing here is saying, here's a format. And by the way, employees, if you want to be recognized, whether monetarily or through a plaque or whatever, or among your peers, here's some rules that you can follow to achieve that, that everybody understands and knows how to play by those rules. It can be an enormous boost to somebody when they're recognized. Mike, you were recognized as, you know, the one of the outstanding teachers by the school system, by your students a couple of years ago. That was pretty impressive, wasn't it? That was a pretty big deal.
Yeah. But the Allen and Allen thing is what you're talking about.
No, I'm talking about during the graduation ceremony.
Oh, sure. That was the students picked me as a community member, not as a teacher.
That was huge. That meant a lot to me
because it came from the kids.
Right.
That was better than them handing me a $100 bill.
Yeah,
I mean, without a doubt, it was last year.
That's what I'm saying. It's not about the money. It's about the process.
Just the recognition. And I was going to say, with what we do, it's made a great deal to us at Company 3. Having our little banquet.
Yep.
It's a thank you without
it.
Having, you know.
You see the pride on those firemen's faces when they come up to get whatever.
Except when I stepped in that mud hole going to the firehouse this year and we got that call halfway in between that. I was not happy.
So I would suggest that we don't recognize anyone for anything because we're all supposed to do inherently a good job. And I think that's the false way to operate a business.
Not saying that.
I understand. I just don't think that's a good way to do business. I do think there's absolutely room for discussion on the types and levels of awards. I don't think there's any need for discussion. This is my county administrator recognition. I don't think there's any need for discussion from the board at all on whether we have awards and recognition program. It's monetary things that are important.
Yeah.
My staff is going to be put together as committees, and they're going to be representatives from here, from the constitutional officers, from agencies and departments, to recognize each other based on input from them, input from bosses, input from the community.
Don't you have
but that doesn't cost you anything, and we're going to continue to do that.
I
just want
confidence.
Don't you have a discretionary fund for these kinds of expenses?
No. Fulton County doesn't have any discretionary funds for anything because there's been too many problems in the past. What we have is we have dollars that have been budgeted every single year since I've been here in the Human Resources Department budget. And the board has contingency funds, and if there are special recognitions, I've brought them then formally to the board for a motion, so it's a public thing. But these dollars are already budgeted. I'm not suggesting at all that this is a $5,000 award.
I think
we already have dollars in the budget for recognition. And
this is the money they used in the past when they gave them.
It's already in the budget.
Yeah.
They gave them that.
No,
I just haven't used it the last few years.
Just
I would submit it's a little less arbitrary than just coming to the board and saying, you know, I'd like to recognize a number of employees, okay, and I'd like to do that by spending whatever the number is, okay? Right. If Mr. Nichols came and said that to us, I'm pretty sure all of us would say that's fine. The reason I say this is less arbitrary is because there's no criteria under which he is informing us of how we're doing that. This provides that criteria. Now, maybe to Mr. Sheridan's point, you know, we need to chew on the words a little bit and come back with it, but I certainly think that it's a program that the county should have, and as you put it, you're going to do it as an administrator anyhow, and you know, the dollar value is maybe the only thing under discussion right now, other than some of the words that we have concerns with.
And I think if we go back to our psychology, Maslow's hierarchy, what's the high pays down
here? Recognition to the top.
Is how you feel about yourself.
It has been purported as a retention tool. It has. I don't have stats and numbers and everything.
It is a fact of life.
It's what's taught in business management that to recognize your employees makes them feel valued.
I know that
the stats that have come out, I'm not going to give you stats, but the stats that have come out is it is not, yes, salary is important, but it's recognition and respect from their peers and their supervisors have been the things that I have noticed have been many people leave an organization for.
Let me give you an example of what I'm thinking about. I served on the school board for 8 years, mm-hmm. and at the end of that 8 years, they gave me a Jefferson Cup. You couldn't have given me any more money than meant more to me with my name inscribed on that and the dates. And that's what I'm thinking about. It doesn't have to be, you know, it really, from a public perspective, I think it looks bad. Here you're going to get $100 for 12 months if you're still employed. You know, and it's that's money is all the way through the whole thing, and I don't think you can.
The only place are those awards.
One very small, discrete section for six people. That's it.
And then the team is more than willing to say no.
Person too.
Pardon?
You're going to have a different person who's going to be recognized if they're recognized.
And next year.
Yeah, it's going to be rotated the next year.
Yes.
What happens when you get to the end of the line?
No, you can't have 2 years in a row.
We're
going to
be static. We're going to have some retire, some are going to pick them up.
It's not a guarantee that you're going to get the award.
Some person may get the same award 3 years in a row. Well, I guess
not the big one. Not the top one. The top one, you cannot have it 2 years in a row.
How about this?
I think it has to do with the money. A lot of it.
That's right.
And that's fine.
If this didn't talk about money at all, the only two things you would be talking about today, the group of you, the only two things you'd be talking about, money and the word pride.
It's money.
Okay? Well, I'm not willing to compromise on the word pride because the staff members created that. Okay? Maybe because some people don't like it, don't like connotation. Oh, well, you can tell me not to implement it, but the dollars are what I'm here to propose.
Yeah.
If you don't want to give any cash, don't. Do a plaque. If you want to say it's a $250 award for the top person in the county that year because it's like the employee of the year, it's not picked by, you know, three bosses in a corner and get to pick their favorites. It's picked by staff members.
Based
give
off
us some
of
feedback on them on what you want us to do with it, but
the recognition
we've had this in our past.
Tell your recognition program is important.
Yeah, we've already. I just don't. It seems to me that what I'm hearing, there's some wording that I think Mr. Weaver kind of pointed out, but the main thing I'm hearing is the money part.
And the team's fine if you don't want to recommend money.
We have to come back with this again. What is it that we want to
Let's look at the money. So we have what 80 employees? Is that how many employees?
No, 170.
170 employees. So in the course of, you know, think of it this way, in the course of a year, that's 34,000 hours of labor, right? It's basically what it boils down to. And we're going to give away basically, you know, divide 34,000 by, divide 5,000 by 34,000.
You know how we budget this? We budgeted $50 per employee. That's what we've tried to put in the budget. Because it's for retirements, it's for regular awards, it's for spot awards, it's for the plaques that you get for service awards, the 5-year, 10-year, 25-year.
Right.
That's how we budget in
organizations. How much does a plaque cost when you get a plaque?
$25, $30, depending on the kind of plaque and what company it's from.
Sure, and what you do with a plaque, you end up downstairs in the basement or in the garage.
My inclination is to give something somebody can use.
But I like to have
cash can always
money.
Be used, but I want something that can be used.
How about we change it to a gift certificate to a local business in the community? How's that?
And we're giving back.
That was one of the suggestions, and people said, "Well, there may be somebody that you're going to pick a business. Okay, well, why this business over that, or maybe this person doesn't."
It's valid. It's a voucher that can be given at any business in our community, Fluvanna. Okay, and basically we'll pay that. That's simple enough.
That makes it a little more complicated.
Okay,
but
I hear some suggestions over here.
The problem is, if you give a gift certificate, we're public organization. It's not different federal laws, but it's a little different if you're a private company. If we give a gift card or a gift certificate, it's not taxed the right way, and you're supposed to tax it. So we can get federal problems, but we don't do it. If you give a cash award as part of their pay, it gets taxed appropriately. Mm-hmm. Then there's no problems. I would love to be able to just give a $25 gift card for somebody who did something fantastic.
Mm-hmm. But we looked at that.
It's just a little messy. But.
Yeah, this was when we finally came back, and believe me, not everybody agreed with everything. And everybody, I mean, we started out with, okay, let's give them a 1 year's health insurance. You know, that's $6,000 right there, and we worked down from there. Tremendous. I mean, sorry, that was sorry. What they said they'd really appreciate that one.
Wouldn't it be great if the teacher of the year got something like that, though? In the Fluvanna County school system?
Mr. Sheridan.
They could get some pencils to give to their kids.
Uh-huh. I did.
Yeah. No,
they had elect Mike Sheridan.
Go ahead.
And I stole some of Mel's. No, that was after the election.
What did you have to say?
But no, we were just saying that's something that I think we would be supporting local businesses, and from what you're saying,
we'll try to figure out.
We can see how we can figure that out.
I could live with something like that a lot better than. I just know, and you brought up with the kids recognized me last year, but that was the kids. Mm-hmm. I mean, a lot, absolutely.
Okay,
how about this? How about we give the top one, let's call them the employee of the year. Mm-hmm. Let's give them a nice plaque, recognition at the annual staff picnic, and a 4-day off time off award.
4-day off time.
I'm serious. I mean, a 4-day off time off. That's like basketball.
That was one of the things that they
Or give them a week time off. Give them 5 days so they have a week vacation paid.
How can you do without them that long?
Because you're going to honor their great service by giving them some time for themselves and their family. I mean, that's used in organizations all around the world.
Right. So it's a one-time.
Yeah, you give them a week vacation.
Mm-hmm.
It's used.
So I think what we're trying to look for.
It's not cashed in, it's used.
What we're trying to look for are alternatives rather than money, although we're going to give them something that costs us money.
Well,
it's money, it's still money.
It's still money. But I think that's what I'm hearing.
Yeah.
So.
That's the problem, it's hard to tell.
What do you think about that, Don?
I think we're. Well,
I have a lot of mixed feelings.
I think here's the thing that's frustrating.
Pretty much.
Can I say the importance of recognition?
I know you do.
No one thinks that you all don't want to do that.
It means something to you a lot of times when you're involved in it. And it doesn't make you work another 10% harder than the 100% you're already working. Some people, you can give them anything. You're going to see the same work day after day.
You know what, Mr. Weaver? Those are the people who are not going to get this award.
And that was, Mr. Weaver.
They're not.
Yeah, and that was the point I was trying to make when I, said you sound like a communist. And apologies on public record to Mr. Allenbrook because I didn't get to finish my statement. But the point that I was trying to make was that, you know, when you basically assume that, you know, recognition doesn't matter, that everybody's just got to do it, you know, and you
well,
don't...
Well, it does matter.
Well, it does matter, exactly.
Yes.
It does matter. And it's those intangible little benefits of, hey, you're going to do it. And the person that is going to go and do the minimum, to Mr. Nichols' point...
You're right about that.
You know what?
That.
They're the ones that are going to skate under the radar. They're going to do as little as possible. They're going to hide behind the little bush in their cubicle if that's what they want to do. First of all, we don't really want those employees. Right.
Man.
They shouldn't be around very long. And second of all, you know,
maybe
they'll be inspired.
You have, in every organization, you have employees that are just going to be there.
Yes.
They're doing their job.
They're great.
They're okay,
thank
but
you.
They're not excelling. You got, right. I don't, this is a bad way to say it, but you got, when I was a kid, it was Indians and Chiefs. Some people are just doing their job and coming to work, but they're pleasant to work with. They're nice.
Right.
They're not a criminal. They're doing their job okay. That's fine. Those are good people in our organization. We honor them. But some people
excel
and step up and do more.
Do.
And those are the ones you want to recognize. I'm not. I don't mean for a second that you should be. I don't think for a second you should be arguing about a recognition program.
Right.
If you want to argue about the dollar, I think it sounded like all night that some of you are arguing against a nice, simple, clean recognition program for our employees. I wish you would approach it at the angle of, I don't believe this is the right way to recognize, but I sure like this idea of having a recognition program, especially since our employees built it. This wasn't built by me. It wasn't built by Gail, although she's the advisor for the Tiger Team. It was built by our staff members.
I think the majority of us do recognize that.
I think recognition is a good thing.
I do.
You all are debating exactly what the whole Tiger Team debated. You're exactly what you all are saying and how you're saying it.
Come at it from a different perspective.
Right. But many of them made very similar comments as to what you made on, I wouldn't care what was given to me, even if it was just a thank you note from my boss.
Why make such a big
just
issue
anything. But
because
they were bringing forth what not every employee felt
know
that way.
What we have as far as how
it was,
works.
Yes, ma'am.
This is how all the different, one employee or two or three may feel that way, but not all of them. Others want to have that recognition. That's what makes them drive forward and really push a little bit more. They thrive on being that center. That's some of your people that you're going to have. Some of them, they don't want it. They don't want recognition. We recognize that and we appreciate that. That may be something private that the supervisor will recognize them on a one-on-one. That's part of where the Tiger Team is bringing in also trainings. And one of the trainings is that we're developing and trying to come forth, if this gets approved, is how to recognize, how to do this, and how to get the word out to the employees, because it's not just their supervisors that are going to be giving these recognitions. It's going to be coworkers. We have to train people how to say, you did a really good job, and recognize that somebody stepped out of their bounds and helped a coworker. That's one of the hardest things I see people, most loving people I've seen is from this county. They're absolutely wonderful people. But a lot of times they don't know how to say thank you. And that's one of the things that the Tiger Team has expressed, that's come forth.
Every single time that I've made a recommendation for a staff award or bonus since I've been here, I can assure you there are employees out there that didn't like it or felt their feelings hurt because they didn't get it. I'm not going to stop recommending because I recommended because I thought that person or that team deserved it for special recognition above and beyond. But yes, some people are not going to like it. But I can tell you, I've never been in an organization where you couldn't find somebody that didn't like it because Tom got it and I didn't.
Because we're human.
I'm not going to stop rewarding people. That's exactly right, Ms. Porter.
We're
basically allocating 10 cents for each employee hour under this program. That's what we're allocating.
Did you figure that? Just figure
it. It's a little bit more. It's about 14 cents. It's about 14 cents. Okay, but the point is, it's a pretty nominal amount if it encourages change organizationally. And I think, again, part of the aspect of having a document like this from an institution's perspective is that now managers department heads say, hey, here's what I need to do to help recognize my employees. You know, now they have maybe some discretionary funds under which they can do that. They can say, yeah, you know, I'm going to buy lunch for the group because we did a great job this week.
And when I see zero recognitions out of one department after the course of a year, I'm going to ask the department head, wait a second, yeah, aren't you guys doing
that's
something?
That's when your morale goes down. Yeah.
And I don't mean you have to award, but maybe they just didn't even know how or haven't done it well enough.
Well, and I looked over at Mr. Nichols, and I said, you know, I think that some of the constitutional officers are doing this now.
Yes. Absolutely. So are the directors.
Of course they are. So it's not financially rewarding, but they may, you know.
Yeah, we just don't have the authority to do the cash without coming to you.
Sure.
But I want to have the authority to have some level of recognitions that involve dollars. If you say no dollars, fine, we'll pull it out. But it doesn't have to be these monies. Maybe it's a $250 cash award for the top person of the year. Maybe it's nothing. Maybe it's a certificate for a local restaurant or whatever. Those are just a little more complicated. But how about the structure of the program? Is the program a bad idea? Shouldn't we use, you know, the acronyms? Well, I think you ought to trust your staff.
If we're going to do like the local business thing, can't we do what we did with the recognition awards when we did the contest, the I Love Savannah contest, and basically just have a number of these that we purchased across different businesses in the area.
No, because those weren't purchased by the county. Those weren't purchased by county.
No, but can we not, as a county, purchase into our local business community
and then give those awards
and then give those awards?
No, it's taxable. Right.
Because it's an employee that's receiving it for work
you
that they've done.
It.
So
yeah,
it's considered wages.
It's taxable to the employee.
It's income. So it's taxable as income.
Now, you're talking about a money certificate, not specific
it's part
items.
Of their compensation.
He's talking about specific items.
No, I'm talking about specific, like you get a
24-hour
gift certificate to go have.
But see, a gift certificate is different. That's considered money, monetary.
It's part of their compensation, therefore it's taxable.
Let's see if we can come to some kind of agreement in some way.
If you're not going to be unanimous on something like this, then put it off until we can get it to be unanimous.
But you're going to still have the same conversation unless there's some changes when you bring it back to us. We've got to give you some guidance.
I will change it and bring it back to you, but I would much prefer you be unanimous on something like this.
Okay,
this is
I know
important.
It, but what do we want him to change?
What do you want changed?
What do we want him to change to bring back? Look at
he's heard the comments that's been
made.
Well,
let's be specific, because we don't want him to come back and say, we say.
Well, he usually does a pretty good job.
Well, he may not do a good job.
You don't think so?
One.
I'll give him a certificate if he does.
And I've got it. I get calls all the time. I'll type it up for you.
What do we want him to come back with?
Oh, absolutely.
Looking at the monetary part of it, and we want.
Do you want us to look at the wording also? Some of the wording
to be one amount, like a one-time amount. I take the money out of completely.
I think you put a little bit of monetary in it, but not much. Don't make that the emphasis of this whole thing. That's my opinion.
Okay.
Just a little bit here or wherever, but
Mr. Schroeder, what's a little bit?
Well, I'm not sure. Let him determine maybe what. But it's certainly not $100 a week, a month for 12 months. That's certainly not.
Yeah, I could live with that.
Okay,
yeah.
Anybody else have any other suggestions?
A one-time thing. I could almost live with the comp time type thing. I don't know what you were describing today.
I like that.
You get a four-day weekend instead of a two-day weekend.
Well, part of the problem with the was the time off. Is that many employees have a difficulty and they lose they have so much vacation time that they lose vacation time every year because they aren't taking, they have too much as it is. That was one of the reasons why we didn't recommend time off.
County Administrator,
re-engage with the Tiger Team.
All right, would you?
Adjust that section.
Okay.
The rest of the sections will stay like they are because they're nothing different than we've always had. We'll adjust that section.
Okay.
We'll put it back on your agenda for review.
All right.
But I would really appreciate the board's full support of it, and I'd like to get to something that all of you could reasonably and legitimately support, because I think that sends a message to staff, too.
Yeah.
And I agree. I think $1,200 is a big deal, but
But don't you think it's centered around money, that this whole concept sort of?
I don't think so at all, Mr. Weaver. Yeah, I don't think so at all, Mr. Weaver, but okay. I will adjust it and modify it and come back with an alternative.
I can see a thank you and possibly, you know, another, that weekend we talked about or something.
Sure. We'll see.
See if you can't get the 14 cents down to.
We'll bring it back.
When I get money, I want money so I can go shopping.
I think you'll find that a lot of employees.
There was a lot of employees that made the very same comment.
I can pay my cell phone anyway.
Yeah.
So we.
We will bring you.
You can adopt the code of ethics tonight if you like. It's an employee code of ethics that we're planning to put in place. But
all right.
What is it?
To adopt the statement of ethics there.
So there's the employee ethics statement.
The can of worms.
Their ethics statement.
I'd like to make a motion to approve the can of worms.
I'm not sure what we're approving.
This is what we put in employment packages. This is what the standards we want to be held accountable to. We want to support our folks.
Can approve it.
Okay.
All right. Do we have a motion?
So if just you can use that motion without the recognition program.
Okay.
I move the Board of Supervisors approve the presented Fluvanna County Employees Ethics Statement and the Fluvanna County Employees Recognition Program with the first.
Just stop after Employees Ethics Statement.
Okay. Right. Ethics Statement. Right.
With the first
prize.
No.
This is all part of the work.
That's the statement.
I move the Board of Supervisors approve the presented Fluvanna County's ethics statement.
All right. Second?
Second.
All right. Moved by Mr. O'Brien. Second by Mr. Sheridan. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Chair votes aye. Okay.
Thank you for the spirited discussion. We'll come back with it.
We can call the awards the Cal Award, too. Can of Worms Award.
Can of Worms.
We certainly hope that there are no controversial items on this agenda.
Yeah, we don't want any controversial items on this agenda.
This was the non-controversial.
Yes, I thought it was going to be an average day, too.
That was a nice, healthy discussion. Now we have the JRWA service agreement.
Yes, ma'am. So this service agreement's been back and forth a number of times. Essentially, this one is what the original one with the original language that we had requested that we've been negotiating with Louisa County. And I'll go down to the two specific paragraphs that have been in question along the way. And that's on the allocation language, the supply of raw water. Subparagraph A is as originally stated, and subparagraph C is as originally stated. And Louisa is going to adopt this at their, according to my counterpart, they're going to adopt this on their April 6th meeting as well. And then the JRWA would then adopt it on the April 7th meeting next Tuesday, if our board concurs with that. But that was the only thing that had been up for discussion was those two paragraphs. And those two paragraphs stayed as requested.
Sure. Any discussion about those?
County attorney,
anybody?
No, this is the way it was presented before.
It was back and forth on it,
and apparently it's going
back to
where it was.
I was
okay with it before.
Okay. Do I have a motion?
Just a second.
Sure.
It's coming up.
Go ahead. I move that the Board of Supervisors approve the James River Water Authority Service Agreement subject to the county attorney approval as to form.
Do I have a second?
Second.
All right, it's been moved by Ms. Sheridan, second by Mr. O'Brien. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed?
Aye.
On the document.
Chair votes aye.
Did we not discuss this? Did you want to discuss it further before we vote on this?
Well,
because maybe we rushed to that. We didn't hear you out, so if you want to discuss it, let's discuss it.
Well, I don't want to take on any more debt, and I think the people at the lake are now going to be paying for water for two places. Not only at the lake, they're taking on another water project, which they really won't have much to do with. And we're already in debt of something like $97 million. And the last time Mr. Nichols had a report, we were 13th in the state of Virginia, again, with debt. And we keep adding on and adding on. And I really don't think this was the best alternative. I did not support it to begin with, even though I did get some information in on the on the agreement, but I don't see how we can continue to spend money like we have been spending money over these last 5, 6, 7 years. And I'm not going to put us in more debt than we are, because there seems to be no end to it.
Well, there's debt for...
So that's my position.
We wanted to make sure that's investment.
Yeah.
And, you know, Lake Monticello people chose to live in Lake Monticello, and
The tax revenues driven by the businesses and the growth in Zion's Crossroads are going to benefit all county residents. Yes. This is not about one group.
No, it's not going to benefit all county residents.
Yeah, absolutely, because it reduces our tax rate.
No, it doesn't reduce your tax rate.
It will reduce our tax rate. Right now, this county historically has made zero investment into any infrastructure that will bring businesses to the community. We've invested in a courthouse. We've invested in a school, which we're supposed to do anyhow. You know, we've invested in Pleasant Grove. That's fantastic. But we haven't invested in anything that's actually bringing business to the area. And one of the things that we need to do is change that. I mean, so... You know,
it's got to change things, all right.
Well, it'll change it. That's right.
It's like the school changed things.
Well, you know.
It did. It took
Again, we, you know, we can start saving for the next school right now and increase the tax rate to 93 cents so that we have the money in the reserve so that we can buy the school 20 years from now, and then we won't have debt. But you can't not save the money and then say, I don't want debt. Okay? You got to do one or the other. So if you want to talk about saving money for the next school system, let's put that on the agenda for next time. You know, or for the next infrastructure investment that we're going to make. But we can't not raise the taxes in order to pay for things that we're going to need to do in the future.
Okay, thank you so much. Now, if there's no other comments, then thank you. We will go on to our presentation from Mr. Joe Rodish, our procurement officer. Procurement update, Public Works uniform.
Madam Chair, members of the board, thanks for letting me take a few minutes of your time this evening. Probably going to be a little bit louder than usual because I'm trying to talk over top of my shirt, so I apologize. It's a little loud.
You said you're talking on top of your shirt.
That's right.
It's a little loud.
That's right. I forgot something.
Oh, you please close your jacket.
Oh, I love it.
I know this has been kind of a hot topic here as of late as far as our Public Works Uniform Services. So let me begin. Our current uniform services, we are contracted with CentOS, which is done through a non-competitive nature. Can't really speak on the past, but from the information that I found, we really didn't bid this out. Not a big deal. We're no different than any other county. You have things just pop up, and these are one of the things that popped up. Obviously, the uniforms, they're worn during work hours, and they're to be picked up and replaced with a new set of uniforms by the service provider on a biweekly schedule. Currently, the shirts are embroidered with the county logo and the employee's name. Approximately, there's about 22 work shirts for each staff member, and that will cover about a two-week time period with one or two extra shirts in case they run out for whatever reason. The new services, which will be using CentOS, there's a couple benefits. The first, it was competitively bid out through U.S. Communities. It's one of those large purchasing conglomerates that basically take care of all the competitive process, much like the organizations when we purchase fire trucks. Contracts are already in place. The only thing we have to do is get a contract together and basically take advantage of that sort of pricing that they already have in place. The good thing about this is it's a national contract, which means we get heavily reduced pricing off of that contract. And plus it allows us to purchase other items from the contract at reduced costs. For instance, work coats, pants, boots, coveralls, that sort of thing. Public Works guys, they're out in the field quite a bit. They're out there winter months. So, you know, they're able to get the items that they need. The new uniforms, we've actually looked at moving away from the embroidered look. There's a couple reasons why we did that. One, it helps reduce cost. And two, with the uniform that's that specific, where it's embroidered, if someone were to leave, the company can't use that shirt anymore. So now we're going to a The uniform, same style uniform, same color. It's just going to have the patch with the county logo on it that's adhered to it, the heat seal, along with the name patch. And the best part about this is, under the current contract, per shirt, we're paying about 35 cents per shirt. Pants, you're looking at about 31 cents. Jackets, about 73 cents per jacket, per employee. Annual cost, you're looking around $10,700 to $11,000. Under the new contract with U.S. Communities, cost per item, you can see there's a significant savings. Basically, average it out, it's about a 46% savings from what we currently are paying now, which is going to equate to about $5,000. Mm-hmm. So it's really going to cut our spend on this in half. And with the transition, there really isn't anything because we're not switching vendors, which is a good thing. And I believe...
And the quality that is it.
The quality is the exact same. The only thing that we are being able to utilize is a contract that's out there that's existing, that we don't have to go out and bid this out. Using the same vendor. We have that relationship with that vendor already. We've spoken with them about this. They're totally on board. So the only transition we have is getting off of the contract we have in place where there's no sort of termination fees or anything like that. It's basically we're just jumping from one ship to the next.
Sure.
Very smooth transition.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Any questions?
I think done a good job here.
Thank you.
And this is in response to your request on October 15th.
Right.
It just takes, we've got a lot going on. It takes time to get through all these, but this is the new contract that'll save that amount of dollars. So.
Well, thank you for doing your job, too.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
I'd like to take you out to lunch.
That sounds good.
You have the money.
Maybe I'll find it.
Stirring the pot.
But if you guys have any questions about anything else.
Mr. Rue will write the thank you note.
Yes, I'll write the thank you note.
He's going to write you the thank you note for finding the money to fund the Pride program.
And no one is assuming that you all don't appreciate your staff. We all know you do. There's always questions about how to do it.
Yes.
That's why we bring it to you.
Right.
So. Yeah. And my goal on this was to actually become the first employee for the county to win the Employee of the Month Award for April. So
keep working.
I've got 30 more days or 29 more.
Got my vote.
Thanks, guys. Have a good night.
Thank you. All right. Good. All right. Our consent agenda, minutes of March the 11th, 2015, the work session, minutes of March the 18th, 2015 meeting, Bowlesville Agricultural Forestry District Renewal, CRM Fund Request, Schools Implementation of Munich Financial Modeling, and CRM Fund Request, Carisbrook Elementary Roof Repair. Anyone like to pull anything?
Yeah, I wanted to bring tab C up for discussion.
C.
And Tony, see if Tony and I agree on one of these things. I think we will. But I noticed in that, before we go on action matters, mm-hmm. for example, and it was brought up earlier.
What page? No, you got it.
On page 2204.
Okay.
But I don't. But it's school funding increase, $750,000 over base. We agreed, you recall, we agreed to take the $6,000 out of that.
We did. It's that dollar sign was supposed, I'm sorry, that ampersand was supposed to be the squiggle. And dollar mm-hmm. sign, because it's 748,000 or 743,000 and 727 or something.
Because it was 6,300.
Right. Yeah, it was supposed to say the squiggle sign and dollar sign, but the ampersand converted it. But these are not exact figures. If you go down to the one where it says 47,000 from fund balance,
it's got the squiggle
sign. Yeah.
Yeah, it's mm-hmm. the same thing. We use the approximate there. Because we didn't put the exact dollar figures there.
So that $750,000 will be $6,000 when it's showing up on the regular budget.
On your budget, yes.
On the budget.
It's 743,728 or something
whatever.
Like that.
Yes, yeah, sir. I just, because he had brought it up, and I was surprised that he had brought it up.
No, good point. And these are meant to be the ballpark close approximates, but the exact numbers will be on your budget for the budget hearing next week, sir.
Okay.
Mr. Weaver, I wanted us to have a 5-0 vote on it.
Well, we talked about that. What I figured is they couldn't hear us probably because we were sitting next to each other, and I was talking towards you and you're talking towards me, and I figured maybe they didn't hear us on that conversation.
Absolutely.
Right? Okay. Yep. I already made the change on there. So
yes.
Yeah, that's all right.
Okay. Anything else?
And that's all I have.
Please poll Tabby. I've already contacted the superintendent and the deputy superintendent, and Eric's talked to his finance director counterpart. We're not recommending approval of this one because it doesn't fall into the normal CRM roles.
All right.
And they know that, but I told them, if you're going to put it in, I'm going to recommend disapproval. Make sure you have somebody here presented. They just didn't have anybody available to talk to us.
Sure.
But I wouldn't recommend you approve that one. If you do, it's outside the norm of what you normally approve the CRMs for, because you've got a policy that lists what CRMs are for.
Okay. So when we make a motion, do we just...
You're not including E, the CIP request for the school.
Okay.
You're leaving that one out, and you're including B, C,
right. Would you make
D,
a motion?
And F. I do make that motion.
Okay.
Second
to approve.
All right. It has been moved by Mr. Weaver and second by Mr. Sheridan. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Chair votes aye. Okay.
And then you're specifically disapproving.
Yes, I did not include that in the motion.
Okay, right.
See, that was my trick to get that money back in there.
There you go.
It
didn't work, did it?
Thanks to another employee that needs recognition.
Yes.
Good job.
I'm going to send him to time out in about 10 minutes or to the principal's office.
Yes.
Second. All right.
Give him a spanking.
Yes.
Send him to Reverend Sprague. Take care of that. Reverend Sprague. Never done that. I knew him quite closely.
Unfinished business. Next, barking dog ordinance discussion. Here's another discussion.
We've got enough parking.
Madam Chairman, you've talked about this once or twice before. I wrote this ordinance in connection with the planning department, the sheriff, and the Commonwealth's attorney.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know whether you want to consider this any further tonight, since Mr. Ollenbrook's not here, and Mr. Ollenbrook was one of the driving forces in this. If you want to just carry it over, we can certainly do that.
What do you all think?
I don't know. When you walk out, then you give up your rights to do that. That's what I think.
He's not going
to
be here May 6th.
He won't be here May 6th.
So. I'll be glad to go forward.
Let's go forward.
I mean, he chose to walk out.
Remember, this is just a briefing tonight anyway.
Okay.
Yeah. You're not voting on it.
We're
just getting briefed on to get some ideas.
All right.
What we've done here is to address noise from dogs.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to tell you, we didn't get wolf hybrids cougars or anything like that. It's just dogs.
Thanks, Alex.
Mm-hmm.
The substantive basis of this is taken from the Albemarle County Code, because I looked at it. Albemarle, it seems to be pretty thorough, and it's I think it addresses what we want. It does give a standard for the noise, so that if you see in paragraph one. It talks about continuous noise for 30 minutes with no cessation for longer than 5 minutes during the 30. So if your dog is happy to see you and barks, 2 or 3 minutes, that doesn't count. It's when it's this continuous howling thing that, like my dog does with his separation anxiety. That's the way it's defined. And it has to be of such volume and duration as adversely to affect the quiet enjoyment of the public in the adjacent property. So if you have a dog that's over there and he's just whining to himself, it's not intended to be covered. Now, one thing that I thought was important is in paragraph two, and that is I strongly suggest to you, and I've recommended this before, that where you have a problem between neighbors, the best solution to it is between the neighbors.
Yes.
And so I have included a prerequisite to prosecution under this ordinance that there be a reasonable attempt made to resolve the issues between the neighbors. Now, Mr. Hazlip and I talked about this, and he had a concern that you don't want to have neighbors confronting each other because that tends to get emotional and potentially violent, but that's why I phrased it the way I did, either that the attempt to abate it can be either with or without the assistance of an animal control officer or police officer. So in other words, if you call the animal control officer, he comes, you can have him go over and make the attempt to work it out, or you can go with him. That would satisfy it. And you don't have to do it in person, you could do it on the phone. But the idea of this is, I don't want to talk to my neighbor, I don't want him to know where the complaint's coming from, but I want the county to take care of this problem with this dog. In my experience, that is not an efficient way to do it. It's not fair to the dog owner, and it's really not fair to anybody else, certainly not the county enforcement officers. So you don't have to go over there and, you know, offer money or anything. If you go over there and say, would you mind keeping your dog quiet? And the guy says, get off my property, I'm not talking about this. I think that would satisfy it. Or quit calling me on the phone or whatever. The violation is $500, up to $500 for each violation. Obviously, that's going to be a matter of discretion with the court. And there is no minimum, so the court can give a small fine for initial and minor violations and then on up. Paragraph D is a statement that noise like this is deemed to be a public nuisance. And that means if it keeps going and the fining process, the criminal process doesn't obtain relief, you would have the right to sue the dog owner for abatement of public nuisance. Now, E is the one thing that we basically left off, and that is your discussion before, which I think was well taken, was that there are parts of the county that this is a lot more important, a lot more urgent than others. And so we made this only applicable to named portions of the county. We've left E blank because we thought you all were the ones that really should tell us where that ought to be. Now, I'm not talking about the meets and bounds description or anything, but, you know, in such and such subdivision or in any area zone.
I think that's a good idea.
I thought we talked about the complaints within, you know, whatever it was, half a mile or 500, I forget the exact distance, but if there were a number of complaints from within a boundary area, that was the way we're going to. That was one of the ones that was brought up.
That's going to be harder to deal with because then you have to have, I'm thinking of this from the standpoint of enforcement. Mm-hmm. And that way you would have to have a regular log, each one of which qualified under this statement. And so maybe I don't mind dogs howling so much, and you are very sensitive to it. So you're not home on Saturday. It happens on Saturday. I don't complain about it. You're home on Sunday. You do complain about it. That's two incidents, but there's only one record of one complaint. So I don't recommend that. I think it's much easier to have a bright line incident that occurs that you can prove by positive proof. So I was sitting there at my dinner table, and it was 5:30 in the evening, and my neighbor's dogs, you know, he's got 12 beagles, and they all started howling, and they howled till 7:30 that night. That satisfies the requirement.
Do we want to say a certain area?
No, I think you should.
Yeah.
I mean, I live next to the
The problem is, let's say you're at the lake and
being fed.
Let's say you're at the lake and you have a pack of dogs that lives, on South Boston Road or something like that, right? And they're barking all night long, and you just happen to be on the edge and you hear them. Technically, according to this, there's no recourse because those dogs are outside of the area.
That's true.
Yet they are still barking and bothering maybe 10, 15 people at that point in time.
If you wanted to define the area as, and let me just make this up, and say Sycamore Square subdivision and an area within 500 feet of the boundary of Sycamore Square subdivision, that you could enforce that. I wouldn't have a problem with that. And what I would intend to do is, if you're talking, you know, there's lots of ways you can define this. One way you can define it is by zoning district. The easiest way to define it would be by meets and bounds. So if you're talking about Lake Monticello subdivision, we can go and give the deed book and page where that subdivision is defined, and then it's easy to prove.
So if I'm annoyed by the hunt club and I can't use this. I don't have a recourse.
Well, it depends on what area you want.
I'm in a no man's land. I mean, it's no other. There's a few neighbors around, but I'm not in a big area like Lake Monticello, Sycamore Square.
It's up to you all what area you want it to cover. You want it to cover the whole county? We'll put it in the whole county. I think that's a mistake.
You do?
Because you're going to get a lot of pushback on that.
We'll get everybody in here.
No. But that's why I like that particular one that just said, you know, you had to have, I think it was 3 or 4 complaints from within a 500 neighbor bound, you know, whatever the yardage was. I would think that the respondent to the complaints, i.e. the animal control officer or the police officer, and granted there may be different ones, but I mean, I get your point in terms of you need to record it, but it would seem to become relatively obvious pretty quickly.
Well, the record keeping is part of it. The other thing is, what is the area in question? Now, when you have, if you say XYZ subdivision as defined on such and such a plat and any area within 500 feet, you can measure that. That's relatively easy. But if you don't have a positive point to start your measurement from, it's much more difficult to prove.
I don't see how you would unless you had some definitive answer like that, really.
Well, it's not as hard as you think. You can use Google Maps and you can basically say, here's a dog and here's 5.
Yeah, but you've got to get out there and find it.
I'm not confident you could do that.
No, well, I'm sorry to say that again.
I'm not confident you could do that. I think you'd have to have an expert witness to testify to that, because you'd be scaling off a photograph. I'm talking about,
I mean, I understand what you're, I mean, if somebody wants to fight a dog violation with an expert witness, I mean, have at it, I guess.
No, they don't, it's not
you'd
up
have
to
prove
it's not up
we'd
to
have
the defendant
to
prove it, it's up to the county.
We'd have to prove it. We'd have to pay for the expert
witness. I'm talking about when Mr. Hazlip goes in to prosecute this,
right.
It needs to be as clean and simple as is reasonably possible to accomplish what you want. Now, my suggestion would be that you designate areas, however you choose to do that, and see how it works. And if you end up having, you know, 20 complaints and 17 of them are from outside the area you designated, you may want to add to that.
So we can say subdivision area.
Well, that's probably the cleanest way to do it. And you know, Mr. O'Brien's point about, you know, being, you know, on the outside of the subdivision, if you put 500 feet or something like that, that wouldn't be difficult because you've got a starting point.
Right.
But I think we're very flexible on whatever area you want to put in. But
can we do it by density?
By theoretical density or actual density?
I mean,
if you say any district, any zoning district that, you know, the R1, R2, and R3 zoning districts, R4 districts, yeah, you could do that. That would mean that there would have to be some testimony about where the districts are.
Mm-hmm.
That's possible. Zoning administrator can testify to that.
That would take care of most of the rural areas. Exclude them.
It would exclude virtually all of the
farms and dogs on farms and hunt dogs and things like that.
Certainly exclude Mrs. Booker.
Well, just have to put those earplugs in. I'm only they do bark, but I'm
you
so
can't hear them over
that.
The geese. You can't hear them over the geese anyway.
You're probably right. All right. So where are we with this? Do we want to do the areas?
Well, I don't know that we know the areas.
Well, that's where the during density would work. You just do R1 and greater.
Okay.
Right.
So can the planning department do help us with this?
Well, I think maybe we should do is give you a zoning map and show you where all the zones are existing.
Right.
And you may find when you look at it that R1, R2, R3, R4, or just R1, R2 perfectly meets what you've been thinking about.
Mm-hmm.
And so we just need to put a visual up that shows
that
all that.
Yeah, that would be good.
So we can pull it up, and we can even get to that to you in the meantime. Just email it out to you so you can look at it.
And
you have some sense of that.
What you may find, what you might find is that gives you other ideas to think about it. Because it may be that well, I know this area is relatively densely developed, but it's still zoned A1. So in that case, you might want to think about something.
And when Mrs. Booker calls to complain,
I do understand your point. I think that
where she's covered.
Yeah. Right.
I think that you could. I mean, it would seem that if you live out in the country and you have dogs barking all the time and you're used to it, that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
I'm used to it.
Geese are used to it, or whatever right. the case may be. But if there is a, I would think that the number of complaints that might arise from a situation where you're trying to establish some sort of boundary would be relatively few, if any. Because that's part of the nature. But
you're right, Mr. Bryan. The real balance is whether you want to do it by zoning district or whether you want to do it by area that's actually developed.
Mm-hmm.
And so, for example, if you took Two Rivers subdivision, that's A1, mm-hmm. but it's a cluster division. Mm-hmm. So the lots are, I forget what size they are, but they're half an acre or something like that.
Bigger.
They are relatively small. The lots are.
Right.
That's another thought of how to do it.
Which is a good point. We would want to include clustered subdivisions in that.
You might very well want to do that. That's the point I'm bringing up. I don't have any fixed preference. The only preference I have is that I need to protect Mr. Hazlett because I need his goodwill. And I want to give him an ordinance that, if we give him an ordinance, I want to give him one that's easy to enforce.
Mm-hmm.
And was any follow-up done with counties that currently have ordinances in terms of feedback?
We already presented that a month or so ago.
Oh, did I miss that? I mean, I remember seeing different numbers.
Yeah, he said feedback.
I think part of the question that was brought at that point in time was to examine a cut that I thought that part of what was said at that point in time was that
we did.
County staff was going to look at a hand. They were going to pick two or three of the ordinances.
No, we did.
And talk and see what the feedback was from that. So that's what my question was.
Yeah, the plan.
So they did that to do this.
But that's what I thought we had already presented that.
Yeah, you did.
We presented the ordinances. Yeah. We didn't present feedback from the planning department.
Okay.
So do we have feedback from the planning department?
Not at present because we were moving forward with this one.
Yeah.
So.
My suggestion would be that you, whatever you want to do, consider that it can be changed. And in my experience in Albemarle County in the past, their barking dog ordinance is a little different. But they did have dogs running at large ordinance, and it was specifically limited to particular subdivisions. And I think that was easily enforceable, and it's pretty easily identifiable.
So we have to have a public hearing on
this?
Whenever we get it, we will have to. Okay.
But anyway, however y'all want to do it, it's okay with me.
Okay,
but
we're going to get the map. We're going to look at
my dog doesn't bark.
So the only question is E,
right.
That's it.
You really need to come. We really need to come back to it with
sure.
this, but also with a chance for discussion probably before you get to a public hearing.
Yes.
With the maps and drawings
right.
and diagrams.
Yeah,
so put it on as another unfinished business
right.
item just so the next time you meet we can get some stuff to you too.
Well, and I think
right.
if you go back and listen to that, there were three or four of the definitions that, you know, we had some discussion around, and it probably would be worth just saying what based on those definitions, in particular regarding area, not the rest of this, but
well,
particularly regarding area, that,
okay.
that might be useful.
But I think it's useful to, never mind.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, sure.
Jay. All right, now we will have our second public comment. Please come to the mic and give your name and address.
Hit it again.
And you have 5 minutes.
Hit it again, dear.
All right.
I make a comment on a citizen made a comment before.
the lady that made the comment about the texting while driving, she was correct. I appreciate her making the comment, correcting my statement. I looked it up subsequent to that and tell you what I was remembering.
Yes.
And I was correct that they did limit it. It is only a secondary offense.
What's that mean?
It means that if an officer sees you driving along texting,
uh-huh,
and he doesn't have any other basis for stopping,
right,
you, he can't ticket you for that.
Yeah.
But if you're speeding or you're weaving under the road,
so he gets your tail light and texting.
Right. Double whammy.
But he's got to have a primary reason to stop you.
He's got to have a primary reason to stop you. But that's the difference. So,
yes.
So I was,
okay,
my statement was wrong, but that was what I was remembering.
Right. It was wrong, but it was right.
Right.
Well, of course.
And you may have to tell.
He's a lawyer.
I guess she knows.
Goes along with real lawyers, Maxim. You know, if I don't.
I don't know.
Answer,
I could call Bob a lawyer. That would have been more insulting.
Okay. All right. I will close the second public comment. And now we have closed meeting. Mr. Weaver?
Just one note before you read that, sorry.
Yes.
The books that you've gotten tonight from RK&K,
mm-hmm,
that's the final report,
okay,
from the preliminary engineering report.
Yeah, I marked it up.
The big one before no, not that one, ma'am.
I know this one.
Yeah.
And
the VDOT report you've got is an advanced read. They'll be,
okay,
on your agenda for presentation and then public hearing after that.
Okay.
So look through it, get some ideas, question some stuff, and then they'll come and present to you. And then we can ask questions.
In 2 weeks?
I'm not sure. It's sometime in a couple weeks.
You
know what date they're coming?
When they're going to be here, so remind us to bring that.
We will, sir.
Okay. Now, this central, is this that budget? What's in here? Central
Virginia?
Virginia Regional Jail.
Is that the budget for this year? No,
that's,
I think that's the one to address to the
chair. Y'all don't have one here.
No, it's because it has to go to the chair.
Oh, okay.
One came to the county administrator, it has to go to the chair. It's just their annual budget, but we'll be re-looking at that. So.
Okay. Very good. Now, Ms. Sweet.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
I move the Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors enter into a closed meeting pursuant to the provisions of Section 2.2-3711A.3, Section 2.2-3711A.6, Section 2.2-3711A.7 of the Code of Virginia, 1950, as amended, for the purpose of discussing real estate, investment of funds, and legal matters.
And I would like you to add personnel, Mr. Weaver.
And personnel.
An issue came up that I need to ask you about just briefly.
Does he have to put the code?
So just read the code section on the first.
Section 2.2-3711A.1 of the Code of Virginia, which is personnel.
All right.
Thank you.
Great.
Second.
All right. It is moved by Mr. Weaver and second by Mr. Sheridan. We go into closed session. All in favor? And chair votes aye. We're in the Morris room.
Yes, ma'am. We're going to meet in the Morris room because I need to put your bags,
your
computers, your iPads.
Yes.
Take your lawyer.
Let me get on the right page.
Mr. Weaver?
I move the closed meeting be adjourned and the Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors convene again in open session. Be it resolved, the Board of Supervisors does hereby certify that to the best of each member's knowledge, only public business matters lawfully exempted from open meetings requirements under Section 2.2-3711-A of the Code of Virginia 1950 is amended, and only such public business matters as were identified in the motion by which the closed meeting was convened were heard, discussed, or considered in the meeting and a second and recorded vote needed.
Okay.
Second.
All right.
Aye.
Tony.
Aye.
Chair, aye. May I have a motion?
I make a motion to extend the meeting to
11.
Okay.
Second.
All right, it's been moved to extend the meeting to 11, second by Mr. O'Brien. Made the motion, and second by Mr. Weaver. All in favor? Any opposed?
No.
Chair votes aye. Now,
I move to close.
Second.
It has been moved to close by Mr. O'Brien, second by Mr. Sheridan. All in favor? Any opposed?
All right.
Chair,
I thought they were going to
close the meeting tonight.
I told the JV baseball coach he had a 5:30 game. I said, dude, I'll be in the dugout for the second half of your game.
adjourns.
Yeah.
I got it.
Adjourns.
They didn't even eat.
I know. Anyway, before I...